Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Don't mind me, I'm still shuffling around here. It's Friday, so we have a lot to do. Today's a very intense gun chat day. We're not going to talk a lot about what happened in Lewiston, Maine. That's pretty obvious what happened. We're going to talk about what we have to do to prevent what's going to happen next. And that is, of course, a rash of insane gun laws that they're going to try and bring about, which are completely unrelated to what happened. Because what happened was a criminal action. And so the idea of going after the rights of honest people because of a criminal is insane, any more than taking all the cars off the road to stop drunk drivers. I mean, that's the equivalent. Or getting rid of all the bank depositors because people rob banks. None of this stuff makes any sense. So we're going to have to talk about it. But what I came to the conclusion, I was doing a lot of thinking last night, and that's why things are a little haphazard this morning, chasing down articles, doing some sources, and just seeing what other folks have said, which is always interesting. It's always nice to have a research source when you can. But what it really comes down to is that we have a national security problem. And to me, the national security problem is the lack of people carrying guns. Now, plenty of people own guns. There's 800 million some odd guns in the United States. So that's not the problem. The problem is people aren't carrying them. And that's not Tara especially. I've got her on the line right now. So we're going to talk about the Santa Rosa County Animal Shelter and things like that. So that's where we're going to go. But I just wanted to sort of introduce that as we go. I'm not going to find where I put her report theme. I know I have it here somewhere. Until I get to know where I put – see, I do think this is under Tara. Is it under Animal Shelter? Anyway, she's laughing to herself right now, but you can't hear her. She's still off the air. But let me just quickly vamp. And I'm going to bring her on now. Let her laugh a little bit as I'm looking here. I know it's here somewhere. Good morning, Tara. How you
Good
doing?
Good morning. How did you know I was laughing?
I knew because I can hear it even over the radio. Now, where did I put you? Is there, I'm looking under T. Is it Tara? It could be. Guess what I found? Here we go.
All right.
Can't you just see yourself all curled up on the couch with a really cute kitty cat just hanging around your neck? Or some adorable lapdog just looking up at you with those big eyes. Maybe you need a dog for hunting, for herding, for protecting the family, or just to take walking. Maybe the house just needs a family cat, or, when available, a pet bird. Where can you find these wonderful animals? At your local animal shelter. And now it's the Santa Rosa County, Florida Animal Shelter Report with Tara D. I'm just going to make purring noises here.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. Well, these themes really put me in the mood. You know, like I said, the dramatic financial one and some of the other ones we have, some of our gun themes are kind of, they have been.
A little more serious, Wild West. Yeah.
Well, they're like, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about guns, damn it. You know, but this is fun. This is fun time.
And where are the fluffy, cuddly ones? That's right.
Yeah. Well, unless you have, you have some uncuddly. We never really talked about that. What's the biggest, you know, nastiest, meanest, you know, most in need of help, rescue, and psychology dog that you've seen?
Well, throughout the years, we've had some, we have a lot of animals that come in that have not been cared for. So I know we had this big humongo lab one time that came in, and he was very sweet, but he had no hair, and he was probably 100 pounds and just looked awful. And he had a scowl, and he looked like he was just, like the meanest thing around, but he was actually a big sweetheart. But we will get some big, rough and tough looking dogs that are actually, you know, actually sweet. But if you saw them, you'd be like, whoa, don't know if I want to try to pet this guy here. So
yeah, they might be self-defense from their owners too.
Yeah, they'll kind of come in beat up, looking sometimes really beat up at other times. So it's, you know, but appearances, you know, that's all. Beauty in the eye of the whole, in the beholder type of thing. Because then you sit there and look at them for a minute, and then they just, you know, you see, oh my goodness, this is the sweetest dog, and you forget that they're not aesthetically pleasing. So,
yeah, and I wasn't thinking of the stereotypical pit bull. I mean, Irish Wolfhound came to mind. Some massive dog that's in the wrong place that likes to bound around, and you know, or elk hounds that are designed for killing elks. That's a big dog. you know.
Absolutely. We don't really don't generally get, I think the probably the biggest, I think we've maybe had one Irish come through in the many years I've been here, and it was claimed by the owner. As far as anything else, probably the Mastiff has been one of the biggest ones we've had. We had like a 200-pound Mastiff that was here.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, humongous, just. And then we've had some huge Great Danes as well. Those are probably our biggest dogs we have. But back in the day when we used to sometimes bring livestock here, so we have had a plethora of other animals. We had a herd of cattle here before, like probably 20 cows and steers. Yeah,
someone abandoned
so we would
their,
have to
their
go
cows.
And, well, it was I think it was like a legal case or something. So we had them here for a couple months. We've had emus here. I think we've had a llama or two. We've had donkeys, horses, all types of things like that throughout the year. So not just your typical cat and dog, although that is primarily what we have now. Just once in a while we'll have something a little different. I think we even had a monkey one time, although that was a hands off because of the, you know, disease carrier thing. So it was just a, I believe the owner had went into the hospital, so it was just like a caretaker thing until the owner was released like 2 days later or something. So we don't really have those as a rule.
You know, people
exactly. So,
they find out that they're twice as strong as humans.
Absolutely.
Deadly. And they're smart, and so they are vicious. In ways that I don't want to go into here. I've seen the specials. But, yeah, chimpanzees can be incredibly nasty. But an emu, I spent 4 years in Australia. We call them emus down there. I don't know how it got to be emu up here, but it does. but we used to, in Australia, where they're from, we called them emus. And emus are like, they're like, you know, one step down from an ostrich. That's a big bird.
And those are kind of scary, too. So one of our animal control officers actually went out in the field. And we have, I think it's generally switched over to livestock now. If we get a call like that, it gets referred out. But back in the olden days, in the Wild West days here, they went out on every call and everything. So our officer went out to try to corral one, and he got kicked in the knee. And he had to have
a knee
replacement. It was. Yeah, he's lucky he didn't. Yeah, that he was okay. But you know, he was out of work for a while for that, and it was definitely a permanent injury. And so, anytime we would see those birds coming in, we're like, oh yeah, keep your distance because they can definitely do some damage. Right, absolutely.
You know, well, every animal has self defense; otherwise, they would have been extinct long ago. So you got to figure. So people think, well, it's just a bird. That toe can rip your chest apart.
Bird is taller than you, and you don't know its behavior. It's like, no, thank you. I think I'm going to stay on the other side of the fence for this one.
Yeah, and they can outrun you, too. Now, most emus are fine.
Extremely fast. Yeah.
They're really fast.
They're interesting to look at because they're very, you know, it's just just like looking back, you know what I mean? It's like you don't think this should be in this time and space here, but they're fascinating. But, yeah, kind of scary. I'm a little intimidated by them, I won't lie.
Well, birds came directly from reptiles. I mean, they're probably birds before there were most other mammals. Birds are old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at Archaeopteryx, if we go back in evolutionary history, you know, Archaeopteryx was like the bridge between reptile and bird. And it had feathers, but it was still a reptile. It had teeth and, a head of like a lizard, but it had wings and feathers. Didn't fly all that well, but, you know, we all had to start somewhere. And so it's interesting. You look at birds. Birds are very ancient. And Jurassic Park taught us that their knees work backwards. You know, I mean, they work opposite to where so our knees bend. Theirs bend backwards. Ours, whatever it is, they bend forward. Ours bend backwards. Yeah, however it works. But it's very. But they are. And there's a bird called a cassowary in Australia. It's a little shorter than an emu. Have you heard about them? They will kill.
I heard.
They are.
They're terrifying.
This is like your worst nightmare. They got this big bony head. You know, I got this mean look in their eyes. Marco's in the Netherlands here. He's checking in. Hey, Marco, what do you know about emus? Do they have emus in the Netherlands? He's like, Greg, what are you talking about? it's just kind of how it works around here on Fridays. But, yeah, exotic pets. We never really talked about that. But this is interesting. Now, don't get a cassowary. Don't even take them. I mean, I don't think they're allowed out of Australia if they are that dangerous. So
yes,
that would, I'd be surprised. Yeah. Parrots, too. People don't think about it. Those beaks chomp, you know, walnuts.
Yeah, chop
you know,
your finger off.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, I've been bitten by a few birds. It's like, no, keep them away from small children. These are especially because they have enough brains to have personality and be jealous and all kinds of things like that. Well, now they're on the subject. The other one that comes to mind is the Burmese python, the invasive species. Have you ever had snakes come through?
We have had snakes come through, not so often as others, but, you know, throughout the years, we've definitely had a few. We've had one or two here and there, primarily, I think, pythons or what are the other ones that are the ball pythons, I think, and then we've had
boa constrictors probably too.
What's that?
Boa constrictors, because we're like one step down from python,
the
smaller version.
I can't remember if we've had. We may have. Yeah, probably so. And then we've had. I know we've had a corn snakes come through. They were, I think, for a while. They must have been pretty popular on the
They're not invasive. They're native.
No, but you know, you would get those in, and people would have those as pets. And then we just I'm trying to think when the last time we've had a snake is, and that's been some time ago. So we don't really see them too much anymore. We used to get in, you know, fairly often. We would get in bearded dragons and things of that nature, sort of chameleons, which I'm not really super well versed on the reptile species of what come, you know, what is what. But I know bearded dragons were
cool.
Super popular for a while, and we
really
got
cool.
a bunch of those in. But people need to, you know, if people getting bearded dragons, a lot of people don't do their research on those as well, and you would see them come in terrible, terrible shape. So that's just something to think about. You can't just stick them in a cage. Look, there's a lot more to it than that.
Now, reptiles are hard to keep. There's a whole different thing to them. Now, ironically, when I was an intern in Washington, D.C., I had a couple of roommates. And one of them was you know, off the wall to say the least. And we had a cockroach problem because a lot of times back east, you know, in the apartments, you know, like New York, Boston, things like that, there's huge cockroach problems. And we were just outside D.C. And so he came up with a novel solution. He says, folks, let's get – so we did. So we had two chameleons. We had Jackson chameleons, the big ones, right? And so
that's one way to do it.
It actually worked out really well. And so we were the only apartment that didn't have a chameleon problem. But they're, you know – every once in a while, now you hear them crunching away. It was
pretty
funny.
He's like, wow, endless food. Woohoo.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they loved it. I mean, the chameleons, they were healthy. You know, they were in great
shape.
Oh, I
bet.
But they could, these were, and the Jacksons, we had like a natural green setting for them. It worked out well because they will change color. Just to tell you a quick story, one day, we took them on a bus ride on our shoulders. And because they're cold-blooded, because they're reptiles. Oh, no, it gets better, right? So here we are on a Washington, D.C. bus with a couple of chameleons on our shoulder. And they were so cold, they weren't moving. You know, but then as the bus heat got to them, they started, and people thought it was a nice little decoration. We told people it was a fraternity prank. You know, we had to cook, we were both like 19, 20 years old, right? And so that's a fraternity prank. Sorry, we have to wear these chameleon decorations. Well, then, of course, the eyes start moving. People are like, oh my God, they're alive. Oh yeah, they are. That's part. We didn't say they weren't alive. We just said they were decorations.
Oh yeah, we didn't say they weren't. Yeah. That's part of the attire. Yeah, that's like with the iguanas down south when the freezes, you know, and they're falling out of trees and stuff. That's crazy.
Well, how did they get? They're not native, are they? Or are they the iguanas?
I don't think so. I think they were brought in too, but again, I'm not well versed on that. But yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, a lot of the problematic species that are around are something that, you know, shouldn't be here anyway. So that's what's causing all the chaos. So
well,
it's like with the Everglades, you know, all the snakes that shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Well, I was just seeing Burmese python again, which is obviously from Burma. I mean,
they're
an Asian snake. They're not supposed to be here, and they're killing this huge amount of animals
everything.
In the Everglades. Yeah, because they're huge. They've been about 30 feet long. They will kill you. Yeah, I mean, you know, one python versus one person, it's not a fair fight. So that's why it takes like three people to handle them. So the question is, when you get an invasive species that needs to go, and they kill them, and rightly so, because they shouldn't have been here in the first place. The exotic pet laws, I think, have changed. They're not bringing them in anymore. So is the population declining, or are they taking over, you know, the Everglades, or what's the current situation with that?
Yeah, so I think it's still a huge – I don't really know a lot of details. It's the last, like, documentary that I watched on it. Basically, they're still just – the numbers are endless, and it's just like – you know, playing whack-a-mole, trying to get a handle on it. And yeah, they're eradicating other animals that are supposed to be there in the ecosystem. So it's really problematic. And then I think we have the same thing with the, what are those little fish called? Lionfish, I guess, that have come into this area that are not native. Yeah. And they're
lionfish
not.
Lionfish or lampreys? You got cut off for a second.
Oh yeah. Lampreys, I think it's lionfish.
Yeah.
Then they're not supposed to be here, and then, you know, they're just kind of an invasive species. So there's so many things that are like, oh, you know, it's causing problems with the animals that are supposed to be here in the ecosystem. So it's unfortunate because it's not their fault, but, you know, if something isn't done, then you're going to lose other animals that are supposed to be here, and things are going to be, you know, askew. So it's, I don't know, that's one of the things us humans tend to do is kind of screw things up a bunch, you know, with the ecosystem.
Well, because they're ignorant.
Or just selfish and don't really care about other things, and you're like, oh, well, I don't care, I want this as a pet. Well, it can do this, this, and this. Well, I don't care. It's what I want. And unfortunately, that's, you know, that happens a lot. The same with getting, and I'm not going to go into the whether or not you should have an exotic species as a pet, but ideally you shouldn't. I mean, it's just, you know, but I know some people do, but.
I'm not going to go into it, but you shouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, you shouldn't, but I mean, some people that I know do, and I'm not going to preach to them. That's a, you know, but we have a problem, like, thinking that, oh, well, we can just make, hey, I'll just have a tiger as a pet or whatever. It's like, that's ridiculous. You know, that shouldn't even be a thought process in your head, but yet it is, and we see these problems. We see rescues having to pop up with, you know, species that should be in the wild, but because people are taking them in as pets, and it's like, okay, you take them out of that environment, and then they go to a zoo or a rescue facility to live their life out because they can't be a pet, and now they're dependent upon people, but they're still a wild animal, and it's just a whole problem, and those poor animals are living in an enclosed, you know, enclosed cage where, so they can't hurt anybody, but it's no life for them, so it's just,
no.
It's very unfortunate.
Yeah, no, I love parrots, and I used to have them when I was younger, and I came to the conclusion that I don't want to leave a bird in a cage. I wouldn't want to be there, you know, and these birds, and I see them flying wild, and, you know, I visited the islands and things. So if I ever do anything with parrots again, it's going to be maybe a big feeder where they can come down, and I can, like, have tea outside and watch them land in my yard. That would be fun, but they'd be wild, you know, their choice, like hummingbird feeders and things like that. I got piano line. I'll get to him in just a second. Hummingbird feeders, people don't care. They can do more harm than good. Do you know about hummingbird feeders? Because you have to clean them properly.
I don't know a lot about that.
You have the right formula.
Yeah, I know that. Okay. Yeah, I know you have to have the right stuff in there, or it can be bad for them. So, but I don't know other than that. I don't know, have a lot of details. Also, you have to be cautious where you put them, because sometimes it's just, you know, like they're basically, you know, make sure you put them in the right spot where other animals are not basically thinking it's a feeding dish for them to come in and grab the birds. So.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. What happens, like, squirrels go with the bird feeders. And, well, quite frankly, if you want more hummingbirds, grow more flowers. You know, I mean, take the natural way out. It makes more sense. Yeah. Let's get to see what people
And you don't have to mow your lawn as much, you know, so there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, flowers are good. Jasmine. I love jasmine. You know, you see the hummingbirds, you know, around the jasmine. Anyway, Pianki, what's your take on exotic animals?
Well, I never have had too much experience with any, unless you call the two-legged ones, but... I just want to say
she pretty does exotic,
a marvelous
but
job.
That's a different show. We'll save that one for the exotic show.
She does a marvelous job with the animals. I really appreciate it and learn quite a bit.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know how we did this. I think it was, like, real spontaneous. I don't know how do we meet anyway. Was it on Facebook?
I think one of your Katie is the one that set us up.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, and she's found other places to spend her energy and time. So, yeah, the best thing she did was introduce us. And this happens to people. Action Radio is not for everybody. And so people come, people go. I've had wonderful reporters spend like 2 or 3 years, and then just, you know, they get busy with other things. So it's perfectly understandable. Yeah, Pianki says right here, it's in writing on our live chat, you do a wonderful job. And
wow,
so, yeah,
that.
you're part of the family. You know, you're in. So that's pretty – once you get a theme, that's like a real big step, even if I can't find it.
Yeah. It kind of has the Charlie Brown-esque music type, too. It's like jazz and Charlie Brown music, so I like it.
That's the hardest part of the theme is picking the music. Mm-hmm. Writing, it's easy. You know, once I get a feel for the report, that's the easy part. But picking the music, it's crazy. All right, so let's get on. We get so talking. And just in case folks are interested, we did not plan this conversation. This is total spontaneous.
We never planned.
What do you want to talk about, Tara?
Well, let's see. So I will talk about this weekend is Barktoberfest in Pensacola. That's on Sunday. And we are going to be out. I don't know that we'll have a lot of animals because we are low on volunteers that day, but we will be out there giving out information. People can stop by and talk to us, and we'll have our book with all the animals that are at the shelter. So it'll just be a good networking event for us to meet folks and talk to them. And we'll have some pets with us, just don't know how many. But the main event is next Saturday. We'll have an adoption event here at the shelter, and it's a pirate party adoption event. So it's going to be here at Santa Rosa Animal Services in Milton from 10 until 2. All the adoptions will only be $5, and that includes spay and neuter, microchipping, all vaccinations, everything's good on the animal. And then we're going to have some vendors out here. We're going to have some crafts. We're going to have the crew of Wicked Pirates, which is a local Mardi Gras group that just started, I think, in the last year, and they've been doing fundraising for the shelter, so they are partnering with us, and they're going to have their parade float out here that is, in fact, shaped like a pirate ship, so we're excited about that, and we're going to have some food vendors. So our food vendors, we're going to have Second Wind, I can't remember the exact name, which is terrible. I should have it on a note. But it's Second Wind Drinks. I think they're going to have coffees and teas and snacks out here. And then we're going to have, who else? Let's see. We're going to have Whacked Out Wiener is going to have their hot dog vending out here. So
that's an unfortunate name for a company. I'm sorry. That's just, I don't know who came up with that. Who thought it would be popular, but no. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it's very clever. So, and then since we have dogs here, you know, dogs. So. Yeah, so it's going to definitely, you know, be something you put in, you're going to remember. And so they're going to be out here. We're going to have some vendors out here. We're going to have a big tent out. So if for some reason the weather is not good, we'll still be able to, you know, have a great day. We're also going to have some barbecue. I'm trying to find their name here. Sorry, I'm slow. Yeah, we're going to have, Blackwater Barbecue is going to come out. So they're going to have their food vendor truck out here as well. So we'll have barbecue. So you have your selection of foods. You can stop by, grab some lunch, go adopt a new friend, do a little Christmas shopping. It's kind of like a one-stop shop. Meet your Mardi Gras crew because they're new. So, you know, if you never really got to talk to your Mardi Gras crew, this would be a great place to come and talk to them and see what they do and check out the pirate ship. It's really cool. So we're excited. So I think it's going to be a good day. And that will be next Saturday, 10 till 2, November 4th. Here at the shelter.
Wow. You did that in one breath. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
did you say Barktoberfest?
Yes. Bark? So this is put on by the Pensacola Humane Society. They've been doing it for many years. And it's back at Seville Park this year. And it is so much fun. So people just come out with their pets. They're all dressed up for Halloween. It's just adorable. There's a ton of vendors there there's food vendors for the people. And then there's a ton of animal-related vendors, like pet portraits, pet shirts. I think they used to have a pet psychic. I mean, they've got everything there. And then they've got adoptable pets as well. They've got contests. They have the doxies do their little, I mean, pardon the pun, they do the wiener races where the little dachshunds have their little, little runs. Yeah. And so it's a lot of fun things going on there. So I would encourage folks, if they're in Pensacola, they should go and check it out because it is tons of fun. You can just, if you're wanting to adopt something new, that's a great way to go because many rescues will have pets out there. Or if you just want to come out and enjoy the day with your pet, it's pet friendly. So it's lots of fun. I think it's from 10 until 4, if I'm not mistaken. And that's in Pensacola. It's Seville Park, and it should be a nice day, so I think it's going to be a load of fun. We're excited about going this year, and again, that's put on by the Pensacola Humane Society, so if you want more information about it, you can just go to their website, and they should have it posted there.
I'm just back with the dachshund races. I just imagine these little dogs running up and down these little slides and sliding on the other side.
It is adorable. So they have a little race. Well, they have the little ability things for them, but this is like a race. So the people will be at one end, and then whoever gets to the first, and some of them are just running with their little legs, and then others just get distracted, and they go sideways. So it's very, very very comical, and they're, you know, little short legs. So it's a fun thing to watch. If you have a dachshund, you should go out, participate. If you don't, just go out and watch because it's a ton of fun.
Oh, that's hysterical. That's like the Calaveras frog jumps, and the frogs go off in different directions, and they don't care. They're frogs.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And also they used to have, which I'm sure they probably do still have, a costume contest, and this is like the humans and the dogs, or just the dogs, and there are some amazing costumes. People are so creative with their pets, so it's really just worth going just to see that, if nothing else.
Which is more creative, the dogs that look like people or the people that look like dogs?
Well, I like it when they kind of mix. So one year we saw there was two teenage girls with their two dogs, and they had Chinese crested dogs. So, you know, they're little hairless dogs with a little little poof there on the top, and they dressed up as Kiss. And so the little dog had like a little vest on, and he had the wild hair already. So, and then the girls dressed up as Kiss. It was the best. Like, it was probably the best little group costume I've ever seen. It was fantastic. So people are super creative. They get really creative with their dogs, and it's I love the duos where they do the dog and the human together. It's just very creative. We love it.
That's wild. I was just thinking of getting four doodles and making them the Beatles, with different wigs. All right. The Beetle Doodles. or the doodle beetles.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun though. But you know, a lot of people don't go trick or treating anymore. So it's a good time to dress with the kids up, the dogs, whatever, and you know, go have some fun for the day.
Yeah, I wonder if it's any less safe than it was when, like, I was a kid back in the 60s or Bianchi in the 40s. I'm teasing you, Bianchi. You know, I mean, I'd just be curious, you know, because I don't know if people do that as much as they did before.
Well, I know. I live in a neighborhood with a bunch of children, and when I first moved in, I was super excited because I had moved from a place where there was no neighbors. And I was, like, super excited, and I dressed up, and I got all my candy ready, and I was like, okay, we're ready. No trick-or-treaters at all. And I have kids, it's a smaller neighborhood. I'm not small, but, like, pretty close together, so I assumed I would have trick-or-treaters, not one. And so every year since then, I just buy candy just in case, and nobody comes. So very sad.
Well, probably because they all go to their friends' houses. And that's
maybe
that's a restriction. But they should drop it. I mean, I didn't.
Trunk or treats are very popular too, where it's a lot safer, where the church has put on events and things like that. So it's a controlled environment where everything's a lot safer, which is understandable. But it's just sad because that was one of my favorite things as a child. Halloween.
Do you have a party at the shelter? Do you have a Halloween party at the shelter?
We actually have a costume contest for the staff, so we did that last year. We decorated our prospective areas, and then we also not everybody participated, but everyone try to get everyone to dress up, and then we give out little prizes and stuff. And then we have candy. If, you know, any of the kids stop by, we'll have candy for them as well. So, and dog treats, of course, for any dog. So.
Yeah, you need costume. Well, costume party would be funny because, like, half of them in there are, like, 5'5 blonde, and they all look the same. It's hysterical.
Yeah. and then some of the dogs, if you come in with a strange costume, they're going to be like, wait a minute. And that's happened before in the past. If you have anything on your head or something, they're like, you know, hey, I don't know you. And they start barking at you, whereas you have to take your hat off, and then like, oh, okay, it's you. So you have to be selective with your costumes here, like more about the outfit, anything too – you know, too crazy, they'll be uncomfortable with it. So just got to
feel simple here. It looks like a doctor's office, you know, with your blue uniforms in it. So if they have any kind of doctor anxiety or vet anxiety, you're not going to help. I'm just teasing you.
Well, that's true. But they get used to us and we feed them and we're the ones that give them treats. So you can tell when they see a staff member, they're like, they equate that with, oh, this outfit is good because they feed us, take us out. This is not a proven scientific thing, but when the officers come through, it's not as good of a reception because they have on a different outfit. And these are the dogs that are getting brought in by the officers on the street, right? So they're a little like, hey, I don't like y'all, but these people are okay because they feed us. So we tease the officers about that because some of our dogs definitely seem to have a grudge against them. Maybe they remember, like, you took me, I was having fun running the roads with my friends, and you brought me to the shelter. So,
yeah, interesting. Marco Netherlands says dressing up dogs is a no-no. He's not thrilled with this. Maybe that's not a European thing. We dress people up here. Something. This is a little off topic, but it's kind of funny. When I first came here from California, I'd never heard of what a crew was. And people think of the word crew as in C-R-E-W. No, that's not how it's spelled here. It's spelled K-R-E-W-E. Crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so a crew is a group of wild partying Mardi Gras. It's got to be a Mardi Gras origin kind of thing. And they have floats and they're either self-propelled or they're hauled by some really big pickup. I know folks that belong to a crew. We have, like, I think in Milton, we have the Blackwater Pirate crew, and there's some other crews here. But it's a Mardi Gras thing. It's hysterical. It's just a group of partiers. And I mean, sometimes they do benefits and things like that. But no, it's really social. And it's hysterical. But this is not something that a lot of the rest of the country knows about, because I've been around the rest of the country. This is I don't know if it's just a Florida, Mississippi, New Orleans, Louisiana thing, or whether it goes all through the South. But it's definitely
a
unique
thing.
Yeah,
I don't know. I
think
for the most part, we're kind of it. Like, we're the pinnacle of it. Of course, New Orleans, rather, is Mobile's where it originated, and then we've got our version. I guess it's somewhere in the areas leading up to these places, I'm sure there, because I know, like, what is the area? I'm trying to think. Outside of New Orleans, the little areas leading away, they have Mardi Gras stuff too.
Baton
and as well,
Rouge?
Like, I don't know about them. I know, like, what is it? I'm trying to think what this city is. Mandalay, something like that. And, like, kind of on the outskirts.
The
so they're all having, you know, parades and such. And we are, and then we've got the beach that are having them. So I guess it kind of spreads, but it's definitely probably more of a yeah, more of a panhandle area thing leading over to New Orleans. But it's very interesting, and people do a whole I have some of friends of mine that are involved in a crew, and they do a whole bunch of charity events. It's like they're always busy. So it's pretty cool. They do some good stuff in addition to the fun stuff.
Well, that's good. We have a little flexibility because Derek's traveling. He's on assignment right now. I'll say that euphemistically. He's having way too much fun. So we have a couple extra minutes, but I want to spend most of this half hour. We're going to get serious about correcting our gun problem. And I don't want to get you involved in the politics of it unless you want to. But we're going to take care of that. Let me see. Bianca, do you have another question for Tara now that I got her here? Well, give him a second to get off the stock market reports. Pianki?
No, I'm cool.
Okay.
Well, hang back. A great job once again. And
I had to
laugh about the hot dogs running across the floor. I know them bad times, but really having a good time.
I'm sorry. That's funny. Just imagine a bunch of yapping little wiener dogs running up down a course. I'm sorry. That's funny. That's hysterical.
It is so adorable. It is so adorable. It is hilarious. Yeah. So I would encourage folks to, if they're not doing anything Sunday, they should go check it out.
So if you get two or three emus, you can have like an emu race. That'd be even funnier.
Oh, that'd be scary.
You need a lot more room. A lot more room. Those things, they run like 40 miles
an
hour.
Yeah, they're humongous.
I mean, they're scary fast. Yeah. Okay, well, let's get all the contact information, and then I'm going to get serious here for a bit. We got John DeMonico is already listening from the Women's Firearms Academy. He's already on the line, which is good, John, because a lot of things we're going to talk about. We'll see how long you and Candy can stay on board, because I want to there's some very serious topics related to guns that we need to talk about, and Friday's the day that we do it. So and I guess let's just do contact information, unless you want to weigh in on our gun chat. Do you want to weigh in on our gun chat, or you want to say that?
No,
okay,
I do
that's
not.
Fine. All right. Okay.
But I will be listening, but I'm not going to weigh in. But, yes,
okay.
So Santa Rosa County Animal Services, we're at 4451 Pine Forest Road, Milton, Florida, and that's in Milton, obviously, over by the EOC building. You can also go to our website, santarosa.fl.gov/animals, and you can call us at 850-983-4680 or check us out on Facebook or Instagram.
Sounds good. All right, let me do a quick contact information for everybody, and then I'll be right back with some stats and articles and things and thoughts, and we'll just do what we do best. Let me see if I can find where it is here. Where did I put it? I'm moving things around. There we go. Okay. Thank you, Tara. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks. Have a good weekend.
Right. See ya.
You know, Greg.
Hold it. Do you know someone who died in a hospital? Did you know that medical errors are the leading cause of death in hospitals? What if I told you could prevent or protect yourself from hospital death? The founders of Hospital Hostage Hotline and ProtocolKills.com are offering a free upcoming webinar titled, How to Save Your Life When Hospitalized. Here you will learn how to have your choices legally honored, how to prevent unwanted protocols and treatments, how to understand hospital structure, how to stop harassment and bullying. Space is limited, so sign up today at protocolkills.com/webinar. And if you're thinking, I'll just never go to the hospital, see where that gets you when you've suffered a car wreck, an asthma attack, or a ruptured appendix. It's not just about COVID anymore. So do yourself and your family a favor by knowing how to save your ass by signing up for this free webinar at protocolkills.com/webinar. Don't miss out. Do it now, as if your life depends on it, because it does. Reserve your seat to the webinar at protocolkills.com/webinar. Catch it October 26th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, or October 28th, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed, through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Okay, so before I get into my discussion for the rest of this half hour, Bianca, you had a question on something? What did you want to bring up?
No, I was going to say, you know, people that give so much consideration to animals are very special.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
You know, every life, from time to time, all life needs help. And animals reach out to humans when they get in difficult situation. And, you know, there's always a human like her that is there to come to the rescue. So that's a great thing.
Yeah, it is. And she's been doing it for a long time, too. So Tara's very knowledgeable. In fact, we made a video for a better part of an hour. She took me through the whole shelter, talked about all the different departments, the vets, the cats, the dogs, the staff, and it was really informative. So if you go to the Santa Rosa County Animal Shelter Facebook page, you can see our video. And so it was pretty cool. So Tara's very special, so I'm glad to have her on the show. I hope she'll be with us for a long time. All right, so something happened, I guess, yesterday, the day before. Recently, last couple of days, that there was another murder. There was a public murder. I'm going to start changing the name. I'm not going to call these mass shootings or gun crimes or gun violence or any of that. That's propagandistic language, and it takes away, it detracts from what's really going on. So these are public murders, all right? It has nothing to do with the guns. The guns are just the weapon that's used. And so there's going to be a predictable pattern. In fact, it's already started. So we have somebody that everybody warned the police about many, many times I think purchased guns legally or somehow got their guns, and then, which is fine. I mean, people purchase guns all the time. But the problem is when they start using them illegally, commit crimes, in this case, murder. And so because it's a large number of murders, that it becomes worldwide news, and then the left comes out and says, well, we have to take guns away from everybody else. Well, you know, I have so many problems with this, and I don't want to go into the same things that we've talked about before, but I want to talk about some new things. And so I had a different take on that so let me get the title of the show here today. It's not the guns are not the problem, it's the lack of guns. And the title of the show is Our Greatest National Threat is the Lack of Americans Carrying Guns. And I know that's different than everybody's saying, but that's why I said it. That if we've got 800 some odd million guns in this country, but how many of them were being carried? I know where they weren't carried. They weren't being carried in Lewiston, Maine. They weren't being carried in the bowling alley. They weren't being carried in the bar. They weren't being carried. And I know there are restrictions in Florida. You can carry a gun into a bar, but you can't sit at the bar. You can sit at a table, you know, like a restaurant kind of thing. I mean, it's kind of weird. But I don't think you should be carrying guns and drinking anyway. That's stupid any more than you should be drinking and driving. And they're illegal for good reasons. I wouldn't make gun carrying illegal, you know, when drinking, but I'm just saying, you know, have some personal responsibility. But the point is that the more people that are carrying guns, the safer this country is going to be. And the reason we need to carry so many guns is because we have so many criminals. We have such a lack of enforcement of criminals. We have 8 million criminals that the illegal government brought in. And so we have a mass invasion of criminals. And because we have a moral decline, we are not the country we were in the 50s. You know, we have a moral decline. There was a time, Bianca and I have talked about this, where you could, you know, they would take guns on the subways in New York to New York high schools for a rifle practice in the basement. You know, people had guns on their pickup trucks. Not only was that not a problem, people didn't steal them either. You could leave your pickup truck, you know, windows down, and people would not reach in and grab your gun. Now, sure. So we have these factors all coming together. We have a lax criminal enforcement problem. We have a moral problem. We have a decay of morals. We have a decay of God and religion and personal accountability and personal responsibility. We have an increase in drugs. We have an increase in everything from ADHD drugs to vaccinations to antidepressant drugs to trans puberty blocking drugs to all kinds of other psychotropics and things like that. These are all creating monsters. So all these things are combining together. Now, we cannot individually right away change the moral character of this country. Be nice. We cannot change the laws and get rid of the unconstitutional gun laws. That'd be nice too. We can't, there's a lot of things that we can't do. We can't stop the invasion by this illegal government because the people that can stop it aren't stopping the invasion and they're not stopping the illegal government. So the only thing left for us to do is to defend ourselves and have as many people carrying guns as possible. That is the only conclusion I came to, and that this becomes actually a national security threat because the government with this invading army is invading our country, and they're doing everything from lowering wages to burdening our schools, to burdening our highways, to burdening our housing, to creating all kinds of problems. And the biggest one, of course, is violent crime. Anybody that's killed by an illegal alien is a crime that was preventable, directly preventable by that illegal alien not being here. And so these factors are all combining together. And we're going to talk about this more and more, but this is not, you know, a problem of guns. This is not a problem of gun control. This is not a problem of gun registration. This is not a problem of background checks. This is not a problem of the CDC, you know, doing personality profiles. It's not a mental health problem either. And that's a trap. And I want to warn people about this. This is a very big problem. If you get into this idea that, oh, if we just cure the mental health problems, if we just find people ahead of time, you know, this gets into the whole idea of prior restraint. We're going to stop you from a crime that we think you might do in the future, maybe. Okay, that's a Minority Report. That's Tom Cruise kind of stuff. You can't do that. You can't do that in a free society. Oh, gee, but it might be more dangerous. Well, it might be, but it's not the guns and the gun ownership that's causing the problems. It's the criminals. It's the leftism. It's the Marxism. It's the drugs. It's the lack of moral character we used to have. It's all kinds of things, but it's not the gun itself.
Well, beautifully said.
Thank you. I just made that up.
I agree with you.
I literally made it up.
You know, I was wondering, what was the circumstances of how these shootings went down? Was there people watching him shoot? And then it goes back to what you just got through stating. Nobody in that town had guns on them in order to protect themselves and others around them that was being assaulted.
Yeah, they can. Maine's an open carry state, as far as I know. Hey, John's on the line. John DeMonico, you want to join us early? I know you're listening, but don't worry about the time. Just call now if you want to. I mean, feel free. And I'll talk to Candy when she comes on and just talk to her directly for a while, and then I'll bring everybody back in. But this deserves a long discussion. But as far as I know, Maine, I'm just going by news reports, Maine is pretty open about firearms. Vermont is the most open. They've never had a concealed carry license permit law. And they've always had open carry, you know, but people say, well, that's a homogeneous population, which is code for it's a bunch of white people. But if you get a bunch of white people together, you generally have a pretty peaceful place. You know, Mayberry RFD was pretty much, you know, the stereotypical, it was a 1950s white community. So that's no excuse. So you can't say it. There are other factors involved, of course. But the point is that, you know, dismissing Vermont simply because, you know, it's a bunch of frozen New England white people is not a reason. It's the attitude. It's the attitude. They don't have the victim mentality, which means the entitlement mentality. The flip side of victimhood is entitlement. And if you feel entitled to do anything, that's where the problems come in. Bianca, let me get your take on that, and then I'll get to John, who's on the line here.
Hey, you keep explaining things like that. I can go back to sleep. Don't have to get up.
Thank you. That's actually a really nice compliment. I appreciate it. John, what do you think? How am I doing? Making sense?
Great so far. Okay. You're right about Maine, though. It is a permitless carry state,
yeah.
So they can carry concealed.
But so they
also
can.
Doesn't
okay.
restrict.
All right.
Yeah, but it doesn't restrict.
But here's my fascination.
Carrying guns in bars either.
Oh, they don't. Yeah, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Why don't you? I get kind of excited when I get on a roll like this. So explain Maine gun laws from what you know of them. That'd be interesting.
No, from what I know is it's permitless carry, so they can carry concealed without a permit. The only restrictions on that are schools, K-12, college campuses, state capitals, and some demonstrations, I think. But pretty much everything else is allowed. So
why can't you carry in government buildings? I mean, the government buildings are like businesses.
I think they should be able to. Well, I think that they probably think that someone's going to go postal in a government building, so they're afraid of it.
Well, then you do something about it. You prevent it. You know, you have people carrying guns. You know, well, and this is the interesting thing. The whole. Well, tell me what you know about prior restraint. In other words, like red flag laws and things like that. And then we'll get into the mental health aspect. But the idea of arresting people or seizing their property for what you think they might do in the future, anyway, this seems to me so blatantly unconstitutional. As to be a huge, massive problem that it's not, you just can't do it. John, what do you think?
Yeah, agreed. No, absolutely, 100%. The red flag laws are wholly unconstitutional. If you want to put it in context of Maine, though, Maine has a what they call the yellow flag law.
Yeah, what's the difference? I heard about this, too, last night for the first time.
Red flag laws, from my understanding, is the individual citizen could call up on Greg Penglis and say, he's crazy, he's got issues, we think he's a danger to everybody, and then the police could act, essentially, without a hearing, without any paperwork. They could just basically seize your guns and then solve it later, which is your preemptive, you know, stealing.
Yeah, prior restraint. It's unconstitutional.
Right.
It can't be done.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You can't seize property for what you think people might do in the future, maybe. Now, of course, the question is, well, what if they commit a crime? Well, what if they commit a crime? I mean, how many drunk drivers do we stop ahead of time? How many bank robbers do we stop ahead of time? How many people do we seize their cars so they don't speed? We don't. Because in a free society, you don't stop people for what they might do. Otherwise, the government can stop anybody for anything. And we're not here to protect the criminals. We're here to protect the honest people, the law-abiding citizen. We're here to protect the government's here to protect the rights. The individual citizen's responsible for protecting themselves. And that's the critical difference. So you don't protect, you know, the government has no business trying to prevent something that they think might happen. It takes away all our freedoms. The government's job is to protect our freedoms. It's up to us to protect ourselves. And that clear difference sort of negates this whole chat about, well, we need more gun laws, we need more this, we need more that. Because, you know, you're not going to – and we all know the argument, right? Because you're not going to prevent criminals from doing things. That's what makes them criminals. The laws don't – they don't care about the laws. So the only people you're going to prevent are the people that you shouldn't – you're not allowed to touch anyway because of the Second Amendment. Second Amendment precludes everything that's about to happen here. So there's not even a reason for discussion. You know, this is why I don't discuss gun control laws very often, because they're automatically unconstitutional. Because the government is prohibited from making gun control laws. That's what the Second Amendment is. Laws govern people. Constitutions govern government. That's how it works. And people just don't understand that clear delineation. They don't understand a lot of the things that we talk about here. But you cannot solve one problem by creating another one. You cannot solve crime by doing things to people that didn't commit the crime. That's insane. That's like curing a cold by treating, I don't know, dengue fever. You know, it's two totally unrelated things. It gets surrealistic after a while. Well, we're going to stop crime by increasing the strawberry crop. What? You know, anyway. But you know where I'm going with this, John, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree completely. But I also think that, you know, Maine's law is a little different as far as the red flag, yellow flag goes, in the sense that they can call the police out. The police will do an evaluation. But the only way they can actually write paper and seize anybody's property is if they are taken to a medical practitioner for an evaluation, and that practitioner deems them a danger to themselves or someone else. Which is
Let me ask. Yeah, go ahead. No, finish. I'm sorry.
I understand it, but if you look at this case, it's a real world example, right? So people always say, "Well, you're already an extreme." Well, this was the extreme, by definition. Was a danger to himself and someone else. He was hearing voices that were telling him to kill people. And then he was hearing the same voices that were telling him that he was going to be killed and had killed those people at the two locations that he shot up. So it was very specific. He was under evaluation. So with this law in place, they dropped the ball or something else happened here.
Well, I heard he was in 2 weeks because the insurance ran out, and that's why they let him out. You get like 2 weeks
worth
of insurance.
Yeah, that may be true. Regardless, he had to be on somebody's radar. This would be a separate topic for whether they allowed this to happen or not. But getting back to your point about preemptively taking someone's rights, the Supreme Court's actually hearing a case on this right now.
Which one
US
is it?
United States versus Zaki Rahimi. What happened was Rahimi is just basically a bad guy. Just a dirtbag drug dealer, evil person. But instead of charging
illegal
him
alien?
For those crimes,
alien?
I don't think he's an illegal alien, but just
curious.
Evil in general.
Yeah.
But instead of charging him with the crimes and convicting him, what they did is they got a domestic violence restraining order against him, and then they seized his guns.
So now here's the thing I don't understand. If you're seizing guns, and I want to read an article before Candy gets here. If you're seizing guns, are you seizing vehicles?
Right. No, I agree.
Are you seizing knives? Are you seizing baseball bats, drain cleaner, and chainsaws?
No, absolutely. Anything can be used as a tool, but they're using the domestic violence laws and these restraining orders to seize people's guns preemptively
Wrong.
That is.
So it's the same thing. No, I agree, but that's the same thing they're doing right now with the red flag laws. The same
thing.
Well,
I know, that's what they're
wrong about. Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
That's
why
they're unconstitutional, but it would be interesting to see what the Supreme Court decides on that.
No, it'd be interesting to see what we decide on it. That's more important.
Yeah,
I don't care about the court. Go ahead, Becky.
The Supreme Court may decide, but that's the people that's asking don't have to abide. But a U.S. citizen has to have due process before you can go about relieving them of their freedoms. And taking a person to an evaluation to a psychic, that's not really due process. Due process has to be administered by a court of law. Yeah. And the results given to the court of law, and the judge then hands down what the outcome should be.
Yeah. Let me say something really controversial. It's really not the government's place to be in the business of, quote, preventing crime, of stopping people from what they might do, because the only thing they can do is restrict people's freedom. And that's not the point. And that's where the problems come in. And so that's not the solution. In a free society, you can't have the government deciding who can own guns. You can't have the government deciding who's mentally healthy or who's not. You know, it's very complex. And does that mean that people are going to commit crimes? So they're going to commit the crimes anyway. So the best thing you can do is give the greatest freedom to people, so the best chance of protecting themselves. Let me change things around a little bit here, because we know the arguments. What do you think? We know the United States is the country with the greatest amount of guns in civilian hands, as this article says from Forbes magazine. How many guns do you think they say? Approximately. How many guns are in America right now? Ballpark.
Probably close to 400 million.
Yeah, you're right on. Yes, like 393. Yeah, this is by Niall McCarthy, former contributor, N-I-A-L-L. And this is Forbes magazine. The article is dated, I think it was back during the Trump days. It's October 14th, 2020, right before the election was stolen. So it's a pretty good source of information. Okay, so the United States has the largest amount of civilian guns, 393,300,000 approximately. What's the second greatest civilian gun ownership country?
Maybe China. I can't
believe this. No, China's third, but that's a really good. Why did you say China? I'm curious. China's a communist country. Why would they have the civilian guns?
Oh, it's a good question. Oh. I just think that they probably, as a communist country, I think there's so many guns in that country illegally and legally that they think they have the control they have, but they really don't.
Well, if they have that many guns, why do they have a communist party? If you got, they've got 50 million guns in China. 50 million.
Sure. Sure. But the difference between China and us is we have 400 million. Really, the fact that we have that many guns is the only thing keeping the barbarians outside the gate.
Well, that's not true. The barbarians are inside the gate. The barbarians, we got 8 million barbarians inside the gate. I disagree, sir. But what's the
Fair
second
enough.
Country?
How about the vast majority of barbarians? Is that better?
Yeah. One more time.
I don't think
the vast majority
if you compare the difference is I think that the Communist Party is willing to use overwhelming force to obliterate all of them, and people are still living in fear.
Yeah. And I wonder how many of those 50 million gun owners are actual members of the Chinese Communist Party, in which case the government's sanctioning it, which might skew our figures. The second greatest country.
Sure, absolutely. And plus the type of weapons available.
Oh,
right.
Look
at the type of weapons. If you're looking at an aged AK-47 from the 20s or 30s versus a modern warfare weapon that the government possesses, it makes it a lot more difficult.
Oh, I don't know. That AK-47, especially if it has select fire, full auto, still probably a pretty good weapon. I would take a 1920s. Well, no, they weren't in the 20s. No. Kalashnikov invented it right after World War II. So I think it's 47.
Sure.
Still a pretty good weapon. Yeah. The second country is India. 71 million guns. Now, how many mass public shootings have you heard in India, or as I'm calling them, public murders?
Yeah, I couldn't think of one.
I can't think of any. So India, now they've got 1 billion people, but that's not the point. With 71 million guns in civilian hands in India, if guns were the problem, they'd have mass public shootings all the time. That's a lot of guns. That's a lot of people. 1 billion people? Wouldn't be hard to get one of those guns if you got 70 million of them running around. Here's the fourth country. Would you take a guess? Just guess.
No idea. Russia.
Pakistan.
Well, that doesn't
44 million guns. Now, that could be militias. It could be terrorist groups. I have no idea.
Right.
This is just what I'm reading in this thing. Russia's fifth with 17 million. Brazil, 17 million. Mexico, 16 million. But Mexican civilians can't own guns. So who's got these 16 million guns? Germany has 15 million. Yemen has 15 million. Saudi Arabia has 5 million. These are some of the most restrictive countries on earth. And they say they have at least civilian guns. This doesn't make sense to me, but this is what's being reported in the article. Interesting.
It's the same gun problem, though, right? I mean, you apply that to us. We have 400 million guns in our country. But
right.
Relatively speaking, if you take those mm-hmm. numbers and divide it by the amount of shootings we have, fairly small.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking hundredths of a percent.
So for the percentage of guns that we own, for the amount of guns that we own as civilians, we, despite the fact that there are public murders, we just had one. But statistically, we have a smaller percentage of crimes of people using guns than countries that have far fewer guns. We have so many,
yeah.
400 million guns divided by, you know, 4 or 5 public shootings per year. That's a very small percentage.
Well, how many people did he shoot?
They killed 18, I think.
Oh, yeah, hell,
they
have more than
40 something.
They have
40
more than Chicago every weekend.
Well, yeah, we lose 22 veterans a day to suicide. We lost 1 million people to government COVID. So if you, and I wrote this on Facebook. I said, look, if you want to talk about an assault weapon, the greatest assault weapon is the federal government. 22 veterans per day commit suicide, which is horrible. Dr. Fascist and the health professionals, big pharma, big tech, suppressing information, big pharma pushing out a bogus vaccine, killed over 1 million people, and they're still killing people. So you can't compare the 1 million people that the government killed over COVID, plus all the lives lost, the suicides, the assaults, the sexual assaults, the depressions, the alcohol, the drug abuse, the lost businesses, the lost fortunes, the problems that government caused with COVID, plus all the inflation we have now for borrowing $7 trillion. So the difference between the mass public shooting, which everybody knows about, and the amount of people that government has killed or hurt, I mean, this is nothing. I mean, it is something if you're one of those people, obviously. But in the grand scheme of things, compared to how much harm the government has done to every citizen in this country, because we're all affected by inflation, the government is our biggest enemy by far. It's not some crazy person who could have been stopped easily by one sane person.
Sure.
Right?
But it's about control.
Ah. Would you care to expand on that?
Same conversation we had last week. Same conversation we had last week. It's all about control.
Yeah.
It's not about solving the problem. It's about, one, the appearance is like you're doing something, and mm-hmm. two, it's about control. So Maine's a good example. Maine's completely controlled by the left. Completely. The governor, the AG, the secretary of state, both houses, all of it.
The senators.
But the first, absolutely. First thing out of their mouth is, we need to get guns away. Why? Because that's about control.
But they didn't need to take guns away the day before this happened. They may never notice that.
They've been trying for years. Every time this happens, they try.
Yeah.
Right.
And it looks like I got Canyon
along. Legislature, legislature.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the one lady in Maryland that I know she messaged you on Facebook was talking about her state just passed a bunch of gun control measures. That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I'm going to make Candy's line live too. And John called in. Actually, John was on Messenger early, so I invited him to call in early. So Derek was off today. So today's kind of a crazy day, but hopefully you're both welcome to stay the whole rest of the show, because we have some things to talk about. I want to read some of this article first, though, before we get going. Just check. Candy, do you have to go right to the bottom of the hour, or do you have some extra time?
I have a little bit of extra time. Sure.
All right, let me go through this real quickly then. So this is an article in The National Interest. It's a very pretentious title for website, July 10th, 2020. So again, back in the good old days when Trump was in the White House. 400 million guns. America is the most heavily armed country on the planet. And then it says, let's cut through some of the background noise. And this actually is a pretty good article for the most part. Let's see if I can get to the stuff where they start talking about good stuff. Hang on here. This is, here we go. So the questions are, is white nationalism driving these shootings? Is mental health a factor or just a distraction from the real problem of guns? Is the answer universal background checks or banning so-called assault weapons or implementing red flag laws? Now, this article and a couple of other articles I already posted on the Action Radio Gun project, so you can find them here. So what they want to do is try and cut through the noise, and they actually make some good points here. It says there are an estimated 400 million privately owned firearms in the United States, with somewhere between one-third and one-half of American households owning at least one gun. Well, all those households aren't committing crimes, and they're not having, doing all kinds of nasty stuff. So we got a lot of guns that are doing a lot of good. Then it says, in the past few decades, the number of guns in this country has increased significantly, and the rates of gun ownership have remained consistent. More Americans than ever have concealed carry permits and carry on a regular basis. My contention is not enough did, especially in Lewiston, Maine, or any of these other places where these things are happening. Then it says, yet we are in a decade of historically low rates of violent crime. Let me say that again. We are in a decade of historically low rates of violent crime, with homicide rates and gun-related homicide rates falling to half what they were at their peak in the early 1990s. John, can you confirm that?
Sounds right to me, but I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Okay. Then it says, unfortunately, too few Americans are aware of this reality. Americans use their firearms literally countless numbers of times each year for lawful purposes such as hunting and recreational target shooting. More importantly, as the Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported in 2013, almost all major studies – yeah, you're laughing already. I hear you there. Almost all major studies of defensive gun uses have concluded that Americans use their firearms in defense of themselves or others between 500,000 and 3 million times every year, far outpacing the number of times firearms are used to harm innocent people. Candy.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And that's the part you never hear about because it doesn't fit the narrative.
Yeah.
And that's the part that irritates me because, in a nutshell, those of us who conceal carry, who enjoy the firearm sports, we just want to be left alone. We really do. We mind our business. We really wish you would mind yours. And last I checked, not a single one of my SIGs jumped out of the safe and just up and decided to start killing people. It's ridiculous. And every time we have one of these heinous acts occurs, their immediate knee-jerk response is, take the guns away, put down more laws. Well, guess what? Last I checked, killing someone is a crime. That law has been on the books how long?
Ten Commandments.
Adding more laws to that.
Before.
I know, right?
I don't know a society that ever legalized
those,
murder.
You know.
Yeah.
But they keep wanting to reinvent the wheel, but we already have laws on the books saying that everything these cowards do is already illegal. How can you make something that's illegal more illegal?
That
doesn't make any sense to me. That makes no sense to me, and it infuriates me because all you're doing, because we go back to that common statement, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with the gun. So why are you hamstringing the good guys or girls? Why are you hamstringing us? Why are you doing that? It makes no sense.
Yeah, let me hold you up and play your theme now that you're here. I'm going to hold on to this article.
I know, right? Play the theme,
Ben. Yeah, it's Friday. I don't care. We're having fun. Actually, we pretty much do this every day.
We always have fun.
Yeah. And I got to give you a theme for John. I apologize, John. I've been swamped. We have a new citizen legislation day that's been taking up a lot of my time. But this is what I made for Candy. You're going to get a kick out of this. And here we go. Every once in a while, you run across someone who doesn't quite fit the image of who you expect. And sometimes you get totally surprised. This is one of those times. Candy Petticord is a facilitator of A Girl and a Gun, a state leader, DC Project, Women for Gun Rights, a training coordinator, Buckeye Farms Association, a board member of Faster Save Lives, an NRA life member and training counselor, and a USCCA instructor. And for the rest of the story, you'll just have to listen to Candy Petticord, because this is the Black Mama Bear Gun Report on Action Radio. I just love saying that.
Yeah, baby.
I get such a kick out of that. Yes, we're the only show in the world that has a Black Mama Bear Gun Report. Guarantee it.
I know, right?
Yeah.
My husband still cringes every time I say that.
Well, bring him here sometime.
Baby.
Yeah, get over it, dude. You know, it's just, I'm sorry. This
I know,
is
right?
This is one of these independent marriage moments, you know. It's just I'm keeping it. I don't care what he says. I'm sorry. You know, much of the respect I have for you, it's like no, we're keeping that. You know, but
we're
that's
keeping
be,
that
yeah.
one, homie.
We're absolutely keeping it. So I have to make something for John too. It'll probably be maybe not quite that out there, but we'll see. John's a more conservative, respectable, not respectable, but you know, just a slightly more reserved person. Candy, you're out there. Let's be honest, you're out there. Which is why
I know people see me. I mean, even my name. And then when people see me, you can literally see it on their face. You're black.
You're black? Nobody tells me anything.
I know,
oh, my
right?
God, you're black? I mean, really? Oh,
gee,
what am I going to do now? Okay. Yeah.
And it's so funny because they never say it, but it's all over their face. Cause,
really?
Like, even if they talk to me on the phone, because my kids laugh at me all the time. They're like, Mom, you were using your white girl voice again.
Oh, what's your? Oh, come on, let me hear your white girl voice. Because I, you know, it's and I don't mean to be stereotypical, but if I've never seen Pianchi's picture, I'd know he was black. That voice is so characteristic; it's classic. If I never saw your picture, I'd know you were black. And I don't know how to say that, and I'm not trying to be racist or stereotypical, but there are different voices. I mean, I'm sure I sound like a white guy. Pretty much guarantee it, right?
However.
Let me hear your white girl voice.
To you, now, if I were to reach out to you and I was to say, I've heard a lot about you and I would love to participate in your online forum, would you be willing to have us sit down and have a conversation about me being on your podcast with you?
That's really good. That is a
now,
white girl voice.
Now, don't I sound white?
You sound so white. Yeah, that's hysterical. That's really good. Did you practice that?
No, I just did that right now. I just did that right off the top. I do it all the time. Oh, my God.
I'm sure.
You know
what?
There's a skill to it. It's called baffling them with BS.
Yeah.
And the more big words you can throw in there, the more people are like, ooh, ah. And they're too embarrassed to admit that they have no clue what you're talking about, but it always sounds so good.
This is funny. We should get into gun psychology. Yeah, well, I try to be disarming too. I'll ask really nasty questions in a very nice way, and people are like,
I know, right?
It's like, I can't believe he asked me that. What do I do now? And because I'm like, nice, sweet little voice. Like, you know, are you sure you know, tell us why exactly you believe in mass murder, you know, or genocide. And I'll just say it in a really nice way. It's like, what are people going to do? That's funny. But it's the first time you heard me say, hey, we're going to have a marvelous chat today. This is a wonderful place. So welcome to the BBC. And we're going to discuss the gun problem in the United States today. You'd think I was British, maybe. At least I hope so. Voices are powerful. That's why radio is so much fun.
But you know, there's about 40 black gun clubs in the United States, of which two or at least three are all female. One is We Pack Heat and Foxy Mamas.
Yeah, they don't sound like white groups.
I'm
having too much fun with this today. I think we've talked about this in the past, that the fastest growing gun ownership groups and gun clubs and competitors are women, black women. I'd be curious what the immigrant rate is of folks that come to this country. That'd be interesting too, especially from places where they don't have gun ownership, like, you know, the entire rest of the world. I wanted to look up Switzerland because I think the situation there has changed, but I didn't get time. I didn't think of it in time before the show. Candy, why don't you go ahead and tell us what's on your mind, and we can talk about a few things I want to talk to both of you about.
I had something just a second ago, and it slipped out of my mind. Oh, there it is. Okay, so I find it very interesting, and it can be taken one of two ways. Remember how I told you, like, a lot of people, when they talk to me on the phone, they already have this image in their mind, and then when they see me, it kind of just totally blows that image right out of the water. Well, that can either be a bad thing or it can be a really good thing. Mm-hmm. So last night, I actually took that. That's what it was. You were talking about how we sound. Last
right.
night, I did a presentation for my Girl and a Gun ladies, and I was using my school teacher voice, my white girl voice.
Your white voice. You can
and
say it on the show. It's okay.
Yes, my white girl voice. And I was doing that because we were talking about proxemics and relative space and all that good stuff. When I know, right? There you go. So when I got to a certain point, the black girl voice came out because I was using examples with the lady, and I said, okay, so you're standing next to a stranger in a bus stop. You're going to be kind of close to each other because you're both waiting for the bus. Are you okay with that? Well, yeah, I'm okay with that. We're both waiting for the bus, but you're going to be more aware of that person. If they do like a furtive movement or something like that, you're going to be more aware of that. Well, we had a picture on the screen of this guy who had his arms out and he was screaming and he's obviously running at you. So I asked the ladies, how would you handle that? And this one lady said, well, I would ask him what's going on because I'm confused. And I said, hun, you're not getting it, hun. He's
yep.
charging at you. He's screaming. Yep. He's got his arms out. You don't know what's going on. How are you going to respond to that? And she said, well, I would stop him and ask him, what's going on? And so I stood there and I looked at her and I went, girlfriend, you ain't got time to be asking him what's going on. This son is charging at you. What you gonna do? And then she's like, oh, okay, now I get it. I have to throw some fusta up in there before she realized this is a situation you need an immediate response to. You are not going to say, excuse me, sir, would you please elaborate on why you are being so exuberant? It's like, no.
This is so funny.
You're going to be like, homie, you better back off.
Yeah, take cover. That's hysterical. You know, it's like you can put the white voice in the black girl, but you can't take the black voice out of the black girl. It's really funny.
No, you cannot, especially when the black girl gets picked. Oh, that comes out quicker than a heart attack, dude. It's like, you better get up off me.
But you know what? Do you know how effective that is, though? Because
it's very effective.
Yeah. I mean, the contrast is dramatic.
You know what? For me,
uh-huh. yeah.
for me, it's especially effective because I don't swear. I never
That's
swear.
Interesting.
I
yeah,
never
I don't either.
Say a swear word.
It's not effective.
I don't see the point of it. Yeah, I don't
uh-huh.
see the
yeah.
point of it because so many people use it so much nowadays, it's lost mm-hmm. its effectiveness. It really has.
Yep, you're almost more effective not swearing.
For me is,
yeah.
yes, and when I go from my nice, calm, sweet white girl voice to my you better back off black girl voice, that
Black Mama Bear
is far more effective, yes, than
yeah,
cussing
yeah.
at somebody.
You need a T-shirt that says that, Black Mama Bear Gun Report or something like that. We gotta get you a logo, and we should all have T-shirts for our different reports. That'd be hysterical. I don't know what mine would
that
be.
That would be awesome.
It would be awesome. Yeah, well, we have a graphic artist. We'll talk to Wendy about that. In fact, we have our new flyer for our Citizen Legislation Day. Yeah, okay. Well, Wendy made our Citizen Legislation Day flyer, which I have a press release I'll be sending out tomorrow sometime. All right, I want to talk to both of you about this, but Candy particularly because you have limited time right now. Mental health.
Hey, can I make a comment on the communication aspect?
Yeah,
it's a really great point. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, John. You sound like a white guy.
A couple of things.
Go ahead.
One is, hey, good morning. That white girl voice that Candy uses, they call that cultural appropriation.
Oh,
so
that's interesting. I didn't think of that. That's a good point.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
But on a side note, but anyway, the bad guys aren't like us. They don't communicate on the same level. Communication is a two-way street. They have to receive the message and understand it for it to be effective. And if you speak to them like they're a normal, civilized human being, they're not going to understand it. It's like you're speaking Chinese to them.
Interesting.
They don't get
Correct.
It. So bad guys, you know, they use the F word like a punctuation mark.
That's a good line, too.
He's right.
That's very true.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But
if
you're afraid to drop an F-bomb in something or in a sentence when you're trying to get someone to get away from you or calm the situation down or manage the situation, then you're not going to get that message across, and they're never going to understand it, right? It's your BBC voice versus, hey, step back.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it's interesting. I mean, I'm not afraid to use those words. In fact, I used to work with a bunch of Teamsters, and I would do it just for effect because I didn't use those words, and they had 10 times more effect. In fact, one guy, I said, without the F-bomb, I said, you'd be mute. Everybody looked at him like, oh, that's a good line, you know, so clever works. But yeah, I mean, if necessary, I'll be dropping F-bombs all day in people's faces. I don't care. But I just don't find it effective in normal communication like we're doing now. We're all talking to each other as civilized people. And so as opposed to dealing with an insane criminal. That's a really good point you're making. No, I agree completely.
But Candy's example of the woman in her class is a perfect example. Is uh-huh. She would never even think to drop an F-bomb because that's not in her program.
Right.
She can't even recognize the situation, let alone use that kind of language.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So we tell people
and
all the time, look, it's okay to drop those
all
things.
The time. No, go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We tell people all the time, look, it's not in your nature, but it's necessary in that environment so they understand the situation. They understand what you're saying. That was all I was going to say.
Yeah, and it's like people who've been through prison have
too?
Instant reaction time and to crime. They know what's going on. They'll know what the threats are because they've seen them so many times. I would imagine that's like, you know, different. Go ahead, Candy. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
No, that's fine. John, I love what you're saying, and I totally agree with you. And our ladies, I'm actually considering doing a class, believe it or not, simply
mm-hmm.
because our ladies, they not only do they not have the language, they don't even have the voice for it. Because last night during my class, as you can tell, I'm already getting excited about it. I'm screaming at you guys. I don't mean to. But
that's
last
okay.
night class, there were like three or four times for emphasis that I was yelling at the top of my lungs. And you saw the ladies and they're, you know, they chuckled quietly and they were a little nervous about it and all that. But there's some that I'm looking at in the room. If someone were charging at them, oh my, oh my, they would never think of, get away from me. They would never think of doing that. And it's
thanks for the warning.
This fool is charging at you. What are you doing? You know? And I also tell them if swearing is not in your vocabulary, hun, mm-hmm. don't try to do that at some guy with a knife because all he's going to do is giggle while he's stabbing you. It's not going to work. You need to come up with what's going to work for you. Now, just because I don't swear doesn't mean I can't swear, and it
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that I cannot cuss you under the table, but I
mm-hmm.
choose not to. Now, you come after one of my babies, not only am I going to be cussing you out while I'm taking you out, that's how we going to roll. So
yeah. It's almost like a...
You're going to see a side of candy you've never seen before.
yeah. It's not going to be sugar and candy. It's going to be, we're talking cyanide. Yeah, anyway. Well, we should talk about language as a concealed weapon. It's really kind of interesting, the use of language. And especially, this is why I love being on radio. Because we don't have faces. We're just going by voices. It's almost like you should offer a swearing class. Just get up and get all the women, especially, to just swear their head off, just for the practice. It might be interesting. And then one more question. I want to talk about mental health for a minute. Do you see a kind of like a white guilt thing where white women want to understand the Hispanic person racing at them? And not feel racist by questioning them, saying, well, I don't want to be prejudiced, you know, as the person with the machete is, you know, screaming at me from Honduras, you know. So, I mean, is that an issue?
Yes, it is. And I see it all the time and it drives me insane because
mm-hmm.
don't care. They don't care if you're racist. All they see you as is prey. You are prey to them. That is it. They don't care if you are a culturally appropriate prey. They don't care. You are prey. I don't give a flip if I'm offending that Asian guy or that Hispanic guy or that black guy or that white guy. Guess what? I am about to brutally offend you because I'm about to smoke you. I don't care who you are. And that's what these ladies need to understand. It's intentional on the part of the media and everyone else to have you second guessing everything you're doing, which is why us being out there and training people is so important. We have to train people and get them to understand that the reason you train and the reason you practice is so you know yourself, you know the law, and you know your defensive mechanism, whatever that might be. So on that day, that horrible day, you will not second-guess yourself and potentially cost yourself your life.
Yeah, I wonder if the government secretly thinks that even training in guns or the psychology of guns or the independence or the fact that we do have the power of life and death to defend ourselves, that is just as much a threat to them as the gun ownership itself.
Yep.
Yeah, of course.
The fact that we're independent thinkers, that we think outside the box, that we're not trusting on the government to take care of us, that we're a threat. We are, because I don't want your handout, because I don't care what they say. Anything free, quote-unquote, that you get from the government is not free. All of us who work and pay taxes, we are paying for that. So there's no freebies with the government. There's always a cost, and there's always a catch. No, you keep your government stuff. I don't want it.
You know, it's interesting that of all the rights, this is probably the most of the universal rights. I mean, everybody, there's no nationality, culture, religion. There's no, special interest group. There's nothing when it comes to firearms. It's universal in this country. And I think that's another thing, too. It's a really unifying force when you think of all the different groups that are coming together, of the separation by government, the segregation of this country that, really got going under Obama again. You know, people that don't look like you, you don't like them. Give me a break. That's an irrational statement. But it's interesting how these things have been divided up. Let's talk about health for a bit, because I see this as a trap. I see this as a huge trap that if the people who are trying to defend against the coming, illegal gun restrictions, they say, well, we'll just make mental health laws tougher. We'll put more restrictions. We'll check people out more. We'll make sure that if they have, as John was saying earlier about domestic violence, or what do they call restraining orders, that, we can just expand that to guns. And they don't take away chainsaws. They don't take away, pickups. They don't take away, large, heavy vehicles. They don't take away baseball bats, drain cleaners, screwdrivers. They don't take away, steak knives or any of these things, hedge trimmers. They don't take away anything that, potentially, I watched John Wick, you can kill with a pencil. They only take away
hedge trimmers.
Yeah. I'm on a roll. Let me keep me going here.
I know, right?
But yeah.
You've been thinking about this. Gary.
No, not the hedge trimmer. But I'm just thinking like a horror film of a hedge trimmer. Don't we start on horror films anyway. But it came to mind. I'm thinking, what are sharp objects, right? Sorry.
You're saying? You can't legislate evil. You can't.
Yeah.
Evil is evil, pure and simple. And if evil cannot do it this way, evil will find another way to do it. You cannot legislate evil.
But do you see this as a trap, though? Because people are, especially Republicans, are saying, well, our defense against, or their defense, not ours, but their defense against these coming gun laws is to say, we'll just make mental health things stronger. We'll restrain people earlier. We'll do all this other kind of stuff. I think it's a huge trap. I think it's this way the government, the gun grabbers win both ways. They win because they get more restrictions on their mental health, and they win when they get more gun restrictions. So as far as they're concerned, they win either way. I see this as a strategically huge error, and I'm curious what you two think. Piaki, too. Let's go with Candy, because you got limited time here. What do you think? Do you see it as I see it?
Yes, because I was talking with a friend of mine on the Buckeye board. And he was saying, because it was kind of a trap, we were testifying before one of the committees in our state capitol, and we were talking about the dangers of red flag laws and this and that and the other. And one of the people in attendance asked, well, what about someone who's mentally unfit? Do they still have Second Amendment rights? You're saying everyone has Second Amendment rights. What about someone who's mentally unfit? And my friend said, you know what? If allowing that mentally unfit person their Second Amendment rights guarantees that I keep mine, then so be it. And then we'll have to deal with that on a case-by-case basis. But by making a sweeping generalization of anyone who's mentally anything opens a extremely wide door and creates an extremely slippery slope, because mental can be completely subjective and it will differ from person to person. So opening up that door and establishing that slippery slope, I think, is a dangerous and very scary move. Very, very scary. I would rather guarantee that everybody have their Second Amendment rights, and as they do stupid stuff, then we address that as it happens. But don't be taking away my rights because of what you're afraid someone else might do.
Yeah, exactly. And there are people who are perfectly mentally healthy, you know, robbing banks, carjacking.
Yeah.
You know,
they
pass
nuts.
All kinds of tests. So that's no criteria. Yeah. Yeah. John, what do you think?
No, I agree. I think that's why everyone's supposed to red flag off. Well, every sane person's supposed to them. Because it's just
every
right
sane person.
Disaster.
That's an interesting choice of words. Yeah. Okay. No.
Right. Speaking of mental health, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they continue to lower that bar, and that's the problem. So that Rahimi case I was talking about earlier, that guy didn't even get a hearing. They just, you know, gave him the restraining order and said, now they're taking everything from you. No hearing, no defender, no attorneys, no nothing.
Well, that's the problem. You know, these Republicans who are running to this.
I think you're right. That's the trap. The trap is, well, now it's domestic violence. Now it's this problem. It's that problem. I mean, you could theoretically make the case that if you commit a violent crime, you're already mentally disabled. Right? It's a mental problem.
Correct.
So
correct.
That's the slope. Right? Now you apply that to a speeding ticket or reckless driving, because that's going to be your problem too. And then there's your DUI argument. Right? The fact that you've had a DUI means you have a condition that you should no longer be able to exercise your rights.
So I have a question. Have you guys ever heard of, I'm just having a hold my gun. Have you guys ever heard of that?
No.
Yes.
John?
Okay, cool. John, you have heard of it.
What is it?
The young lady, Sarah, who runs Hold My Guns, she is an amazing lady. So what Hold My Guns is, in a nutshell, is a person in crisis can reach out to different FFLs in the area, and those FFLs will literally hold their guns for them while they are going through this period of crisis, because we all know if law enforcement gets a hold of your firearms, good luck getting them back.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
With this, Hold My Guns, we are literally holding these people's guns until that period of crisis is over. And there's no law enforcement involvement. There's no lawyers involved. There's nothing. It is an agreement between the person involved is already partnered with Hold My Guns. So there's a contract there. There's an understanding there. And it's a huge safe haven for people in crisis, because we all know they tell you, oh, my gosh, if you're feeling stressed, if you need help, whatever, reach out and call us. It's a confidential call. No, it's not. No, it's not. If you reach out and you are a gun owner, at some point in time, I guarantee you that's going to come up. Didn't you call the suicide hotline on such and such a date? Didn't you call? Didn't you visit? So that's why so many people who have firearms, that's one of the reasons, as they're struggling, they feel trapped because they're afraid to reach out for help. Well, Hold My Gun is a safe space for these people to be able to say, you know what, I'm struggling right now. I need someone to get these out of my house. I don't want to do anything stupid, but the voices are getting loud, whatever's going on. Mm-hmm. And that's when Hold My Guns comes into play, and it's a fabulous program. Absolutely wonderful.
This should be subsidized. Yeah, no. Now, is this an option if someone has a restraining order or something like that, as opposed to a red flag law? Is that an alternative? Is that in law anywhere?
No.
You know what? That I don't know, but I don't think so.
Okay, project. All right, folks. Let's get going here.
A little bit?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think it's a great concept. I think that there's some pitfalls in it, in large part because, you know, if you look at the federal law, if you've been committed for any reason on a mental health issue, you're prohibited from possessing a firearm. Now you're taking your firearm and putting
adjudicated.
It into an organization.
Yeah.
So, but if you're putting your firearm into a location that's controlled by the ATF,
right,
it's a backdoor way for them to get to people who think they're safe.
They could just take the guns from the firearm. Yeah, that's, you know, it's funny you should say that because I was just sort of like going in that direction that, yeah, I mean, who's to say they're safe with the person holding the guns?
Right. So the
they
have control over all the paperwork for the FFLs at any time. Most of it's electronic anyway, so they can just do it electronically. But the people that do like hard copies that don't do it electronically, they show up to their door. I want all your paperwork. We want to look at these five people because they've got guns here that you're safekeeping. Why?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So
that's my only concern
with that.
And I'm pretty sure that is something Sarah has considered because she's done her homework. And I am not a representative for Hold My Gun, so I don't know all the ins and outs.
We'll bring her on the show.
I do know Sarah. And
let's get her on.
I think it would
be
awesome to have her on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I can reach out to her if you'd like.
Well, obviously, yes. You know, anybody that you talk about, any of these
people,
you're both welcome to bring on anybody you want onto the show. That's part of the fun of this and part of the interest.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not.
Yeah, go ahead. No,
I'm not doubting sincerity and the intentions. I just think that for people that are considering it, I just want them to think it through. I want them to get help. I want them to have a safe place to do it. But I also want them to understand the ramifications, no matter how you look at it. It's dropping your gun off, using that organization. One, they can subpoena their records because there's no privilege attached.
Right.
And then on top of that, if you go to any ATF and if it's on their website, I looked once before and I can't remember if I saw it or not, but they usually have like a listing of, you know, FFLs or you can contact someone within their organization to get that. That's what opens up people to that extra scrutiny based on what the ATF's been doing, especially now with them just showing up at gun shops and taking paperwork. There's been more than one case where they've showed up and said, this person's buying five.
And, John, what you're saying is also a concern that has been brought up by other people. And, again, I don't know enough about the organization, but you're not the first one to bring that up. And that is a valid concern because, like you said, the FFL is still overseen by the ATF, who can do whatever the flip they want, apparently.
The answer is to get rid of the ATF.
that's
the first thing is get rid of the ATF, but that's another story. But there must be a way to put into law that if guns are being held privately, then they're being held privately, that they can't be touched. They're still the property of a person. Of course, that doesn't guarantee it's going to happen because, like I say, the government does what they please. You know, look at Waco. So it's a dangerous thing, but the ATF really needs to be gotten rid of. Be curious what the new speaker does. Let's talk about a couple of pieces of legislation that we have here, because one of the biggest problems with the gun community that I see is that you don't they're always trying to say, well, it's the Second Amendment, you can't pass this gun control law. And then, of course, the left gets up and says, but we'll be safer, we'll feel better, we can't. You're causing these mass shootings. You know, we can't put restrictions on the Second Amendment. We can do anything we want. Rah, rah, rah. And they go all this emotional nonsense. But the gun committee never comes out with opposing legislation that increases gun rights. And I just don't, and I think that, to me, that's the best way to fight back. So I gave you all three bills yesterday. I'm sure you've been studying them all night long. And I just wanted to go over a couple of these. Yeah, exactly right. But the first one.
I know, right?
Yeah, that's okay. Well, you got time. Everybody knows you have them now. I announced it on the radio. But they're also, I'll put them on our. Sorry. A little peer pressure there. But the first one, and I'll post these. Yeah, exactly. I'll post these to the Action Radio Gun Project, too. But the first one is an act. And this is written by Anthony Nunez, who used to be on the show, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. He was going for his PhD in electrical engineering. His parents came here from Cuba on a raft. Anthony, I'd love to get back in touch with, but he's probably an electrical engineer with a PhD doing great things, which is wonderful. So he wrote an act to increase the exercise and enjoyment of the Second Amendment. And basically it says the Civil Rights Act under Title 18, Section 241 clearly states that a conspiracy to deny the exercise or enjoyment of any constitutional right is punishable by fines and imprisonment. Yet anti-gun rights laws and enforcement of those laws goes on all the time. In reversing these laws with the protections of the civil rights laws, because we're going to make gun ownership a civil right. We're going to include that on the list of things. That's another bill. An additional body of law can be created to enhance rather than restrict the exercise and enjoyment of Second Amendment rights. That is the purpose of this act. It's got a little bit more in the intro, but basically here are the basic provisions. One, tax credits and deductions for actions related to firearms. Two, legal protections for Good Samaritans in lawful protection of others. That would be like Lewiston. Three, education of the posterity in safe handling of the posterity. That'd be like high schools. Of the safe handling, ownership, and usage of firearms. And four, strengthening of relationships between the body of the people and agents of the state. In other words, law enforcement. But the biggest one that I have is tax credit deductions for action related to firearms. And that would be lawful purchase, ammunition, permits and licensing, classes, range fees, mileage, membership in Second Amendment organizations, competitions, reloading, hunting, eye and ear protection, instructor-related expenses. You guys are going to love this. Police reimbursements for training citizens, USA-made firearms, ammunition, and gear, carry insurance, gun maintenance, and repair would all be either tax deductible or tax credits. What do you think?
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah. There, we need to get this to the gun groups. See, here's the frustration for me. At Action Radio, it takes enough time to do the show. We have our Citizen Legislation Day and actually write this legislation. We cannot share it for people. We cannot advocate it. The gun groups have millions of people across this country. We need you two and everybody else to get it to the gun groups. And the gun, I want to try and get Eric Pratt on the show from Gun Owners of America. But we need the gun owners. In fact, I invited Cheryl Todd, who's a broadcaster, to come join us today. Apparently, Cheryl, Candy, you know each other, I'm guessing?
Yes, we do. Cheryl's awesome.
Well, we'll get her on the show one time, too. But this is the kind of thing we need. We've got the laws written. This was written February 13th, 2020. This law is almost 3 years old. Wait, but it is 3 years old. 3.5 years old. It's almost 4 years old. Okay? And yet, no one else is coming up with tax deductions and tax credits for all the things. And you know who this really affects is low-income people. Low-income people who cannot exercise their Second Amendment rights because they don't have, in liberal terms, access to quality ammunition and firearms.
Mm-hmm.
So you can even put this on a minority issue as well. It's like, well, wait a minute. We've got black and Hispanic people that can't afford to exercise their Second Amendment rights. This is racism. I mean, I don't care what basis you put it on. But there's no reason that a right should be taxed.
I love it.
Panel?
I do. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. Well, it's in your messenger. Ball's in your court. Yeah.
All righty then. I'm going to be forwarding that puppy.
You should. Well, what you could do, here's a thought I just had. Both you and John could teach a class in gun legislation and advocacy. You know, as a little sideline. Train people. All they have to do is read the bill, copy the link, send it to government and media. That's it. John?
Yeah, no, agreed. I think it could be tweaked here and there for sure, but on its face, I think it's a good bill. I think you need to change the name.
Oh,
so
okay. We can do that. I'm open.
Well, in large part, I'll tell you why. why. Is because the left is really good about camouflaging what they do. Right. So Affordable Care Act, right? It had nothing to do with affordable care, but it made it sound good. California had a proposition 3-4 years ago, something like that, 4 or 5 years ago now. No, more than that. It was 9 years ago. Anyway, it was Prop 47. It was the Safe Neighborhoods and School Act. But what it did was that was the act that reduced all the felonies to misdemeanors. Petty theft went up to $950. Shoplifting.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
Forgery, bad checks, and all that.
Yeah.
So
I want to hold you up only because I
want
to get two more bills in.
If you name it differently.
Go ahead.
Differently, you give it something that's appealing to everybody so they can't argue against. I don't care what the name is. I mean, you could call it, you know, the Human Rights Protection Act.
Exactly, yeah.
For doing protection for that.
Yeah, exactly.
the
low income minority,
bill or, encouragement bill,
rights enhancement act. Yeah. I don't do that.
Sure.
And I'll tell you why, because specifically that's one of our principles here is we name bills correctly. And so I'd rather argue on the merits of it. And I know what you're saying, so the equivalent of the Affordable Care Act, it's a good idea and I appreciate it. I would have to think very carefully if I want to change one of our principles here, which is we name the bills honestly. And we argue
sure, but I would think about it in terms of this is warfare. You can't hamstring yourself.
No, it's a good idea.
By not doing it the same way they do it,
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I would think of is because the reason we can't get stuff passed is because we do these things in such a way that, we argue on the merits, but they're not arguing the merits. So if you can't fight a game with one, you can't win a fight with one hand tied behind your back.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't know if I want to change it, though. I want to get two bills in before Candy has to go. Candy, you got like 5 more minutes or how much time do you got?
Yep. I got about quarter till. I'll be off.
Okay. So let's do the next two bills. And we can come back to this one, John, because it's a good point. I'm not trying to dismiss it. I'm just trying to get things done here. The second bill is one of the first ones I wrote, November 19th, 2017. The Gun Purchase Background Check Using the Banned List Only Act. Currently, every person who wants to purchase a gun has to go through a background check. The potential is there, despite what the government says, to register everyone into some government database. And, of course, we now know that's true. Then I said to remove that possibility and not search citizens without any probable cause, instant checks will be reversed. Instead of checking every customer, each gun retailer and seller will have the list of prohibited persons with photographs in their computer system in a secure government computer program that only they and their staff can use. When a customer wants to make a purchase, their photo ID is compared to the prohibited list. If they are not on the prohibited list, then the purchase goes through. It is up to government to maintain the most current prohibited list, but this way no government record of the gun purchase is made during the computerized background check, only a check of the purchaser against the prohibited list in the computer. Whether all record of the purchase should be also be scrubbed or just kept at the retailer is another consideration. All right, I'll save that part. But that's basically the idea. So I don't have title or statute. This is before I even got title and section. This could be done in any state. This could be done at the federal level. This could be done anywhere. But the idea is prohibited list of persons is at the gun retailer. And they take your driver's license with photo ID, especially if your name is John Smith. Right, and they compare because probably a million John Smiths. This is where nobody mistakes Greg Pangos. I'm it. this is not a problem. But common names have it's a problem. So you give your government ID, and of course, forged driver's license. That's another issue too. But assuming you have a legitimate government photo ID, that's compared to the prohibited list. If you aren't on the prohibited list, you whatever purchase you want. Sound good?
Yeah, but you can't fix the list.
Yeah, I was
going
to say there.
What?
Go ahead, Kenny.
I was going to say I'd actually need to see it because there was a lot going on there. It
probably
sounds good, but I can't give it my plan.
but it's in your messenger, yeah. So, but that's the basic plan. You know who I actually talked to about this was Larry Pratt back at WBY. I was fortunate to have him on the line. He loved this idea. He thought it was a great idea. And I just have to get to Eric Pratt again on this too. But this is a way that we can, because they keep talking about these universal background checks, which is really, a way to stop gun purchases and making it just harder to own guns. But this way, you just have the prohibited list. Because there is a prohibited list. All right, that's what the government does. They check you against the prohibited list, right? Well, all I'm saying is the prohibited list would be at the gun store. And they can check your ID directly. That's it. That's the whole bill.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
It doesn't address the problem of fixing the list.
The problem of what now, Sean?
The list needs to be fixed first. And so what they're doing now, they're just doing it at a federal level. You make the phone call, they check their list, and they say the person's on it or not.
Yeah.
So it would be no difference in having that in control of the state unless you have a way to fix the list and make sure it's accurate.
That's not my problem. That's the government's problem. And that's specifically in the bill.
Then I'm not sure what the bill is fixing. Because that's what they do now.
The idea that there's
no
record
is in your possession.
There's no record of your name and your purchase. It's anonymous.
There's always going to be a record. So you're going to get rid of the FFL form entirely?
It's a different question, but I haven't. That's a different consideration. It's a possibility.
Then it doesn't get rid of the record. Is what I'm saying.
Okay,
if
but
you're
it gets
on a
rid
form,
of the it gets
the
rid of the
call,
FBI. It gets rid of the electronic record of the background check. That's the part it gets rid of. Let me do one more because Candy's almost out of time here.
Okay.
I got a minute. Yeah, we'll come back to these. You know, the third one is the Home Defense. Yeah, okay. The third one is the Home Defense Hearing Protection Act, and this is another Anthony Nunez bill, March 24th of 2020. Basically, what it says is, we make suppressors and silencers legal so that you don't go deaf when you're defending your life. That's what this does. And I can do it real simply. Here's the summary. Bill removing silencer suppressors from the NFA, the National Firearms Act of 1934, list of regulated items. Additionally, all records and registries of prior silencer suppressor owners must be destroyed. Finally, all owners of silencer suppressors who paid the $200 for the ATF tax stamp must be refunded their $200 plus the amount lost to inflation. Rationale. The Department of Justice and Congress of 1934 included silencers and suppressors in the list of NFA-regulated items without justification. Since then, there were over 2 million suppressors in circulation, yet there is only a 0.003% conviction rate on alleged crimes involving suppressors. Here's the text of the bill. It's very short. 1. Let it be made into law, effective immediately, that silencers, suppressors are to be removed from the NFA list of regulated items. 2, that all persons who are, anyway, that's basically it. Let's just stop right there. So in other words, silencers and suppressors become legal. Logically, why should you go deaf when you're defending your life? Why should you have to make that choice? That's what this bill does. Candy?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Absolutely. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
you're right. Why should I have to go deaf defending my life? And mm-hmm. all the hoops and all the stuff that people have to go through now just to get a suppressor. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're at home, you know, and it, you know, you're defending your family, your choice is go deaf, you know, or die. That's what kind of a choice is that? So
yeah,
maybe John knows
cool.
more about the origins. Yeah. Now the police don't carry suppressors. How come you guys don't have them?
Yeah. Well, they're not practical.
Oh, okay.
Frankly,
how about for home,
for
home defense?
I mean, it's
right.
not practical for, you know, just strap a gun on your hip with a suppressor attached to it.
Well, if you had open carry.
Yeah.
How about do criminals
even
use
if
them?
It's open carry? And as a cop, mm-hmm. if you want to run with a gun and a suppressor attached to it and then have to fight with it on you,
good luck
not
with that.
Practical.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not
okay,
practical.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
But,
so,
but
it was
yeah,
still,
no, I agree with you, though. They should be legal.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking too. Is what was the origin of putting them on the list, the banned list to begin with? Well, what's the virtue in having loud guns? I mean, dangerously loud guns.
Well, I think that was always based on you would be able to hear the shots, identify where they're coming from, and identify that it's happening. That was the theory behind it. So if
okay.
you're in an environment where the shots are pressed, especially in an urban environment, it makes it harder to hear and identify where it's coming from. Now, is that true? Probably not. But that was probably the theory behind it.
Yeah, but the consequences.
Well,
how
not,
many?
It's
how many,
not like the movie. So, has
right.
you ever shot a suppressed weapon?
No. Tell me.
Okay, so it's not that quiet. I mean, it's a lot quieter, and they make ones mm-hmm. that are better now. But you still mm-hmm. hear the shot. So it's not like the movies where it's, you know, like a bow dart.
It's not James
you
Bond. Know. It's not like a.
Yeah, exactly. So you're
okay.
still gonna
well, and that's
that
actually
better.
Because that disputes the argument that says, well, you can still hear the gunshot. You know, if you're close enough to be hit
right.
by it, you can probably hear it even with a suppressor. But you're not going to go deaf from it. So we're not trying to stop the sound. We're just trying to have people avoid hearing damage while they're defending themselves. You shouldn't have to be a victim while you're defending yourself because you haven't done anything wrong. And yet you make victims.
No,
you make hearing. Yeah. Okay. How many law enforcement people have had hearing loss because of the use of firearms in defending their life or, you know, arresting people or other things?
Oh, tons. It's actually considered a workers' comp claim. It's presumptive.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's presumptive. You come up with hearing loss, even after you're off the job, it's presumptive mm-hmm. that it was job-related.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. So
most people don't understand, too, is like under stress, you have that auditory exclusion sometimes.
What's that?
You don't hear everything. Your sound gets deafened. Like, you won't hear the shots. You won't hear
right.
what's going on around you. But
you still
even if that happens, your ears
right.
are still getting damaged, right? So most
yeah.
people think if I don't hear it, I'm not damaged. Yeah, there's still damage behind it.
John, do you ever have people who go on the range who already have hearing loss and they will tell you, no, I'm not going to wear a hearing aids or ear pro because I can't hear anyway. And then you have to have that conversation with them. It's like, dude, even though you can't hear, you are still damaging your inner ear and all that circuitry in there. No, you got to wear ear protection. I'm shocked by how many people, and it tends to be men, who are like, nah, I'm already deaf anyway, it can't hurt, and I'm like, no, hon, you got to wear ear pro. It's weird. Kind of a weird conversation to have, but throw that one out there.
Yeah, it does happen, and it's pretty exclusive to men. But, yeah, it's because we've got issues.
Not touching that one. Not touching that.
No, hey, listen, you know, and what I see is equally stupid is guys have that foam earplug barely resting in their ears, not doing anything. They're not taught how to use the earplugs properly. And me, you know, being such a sound conscious person, I you know, everything I like is noisy. Flying airplanes, I have my Dave Clarks. At the range, I use the foam and a headset. I got great protection. My fear is that when I actually hear a gunshot for the first time, if I have to save my life, God forbid, but if I have to do that, it's going to shock the hell out of me because it's going to be a hell of a lot louder than any gunshot I've ever heard before because I always wear double protection because I don't want to damage my hearing, says the rock and roll guitar player. Mm.
Love it.
Yeah, for sure. So, Candy, have you ever been on the range when someone forgot their ear protection and flew?
Oh, my gosh,
flew the
yeah.
first round off?
Yeah.
What was that reaction?
Either
like?
Forgot it or you told them, you don't have those in right, you don't have those on properly, oh, this will work, or the ones who go out there with the AirPods in their ears. This will be enough because my AirPods are noise canceling. And you stand there and you argue with them, and they're like, nope, this will be just fine. So you go, okay, you have fun with that. And that first shot, that's all it takes is one shot. It's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, but that shot can do permanent damage.
Honest,
that's the problem.
When it's an honest accident, then you feel bad for it. But when it's someone that you've tried to tell them and you've tried to coach and advise them and they choose to ignore you, it is what it is.
How loud are these gunshots? You got to go? Well, thanks for the extra time.
Yeah, I got to cruise, but gunshots are extremely loud, extremely loud. And we like to say on the range, if someone forgets their ear protection or chooses not to wear it or wears it incorrectly, that is an immediate self-correcting problem. Just let them go out on the range. It's an immediate self-correcting problem.
Yeah. Thanks for your report. Take a look at the legislation. I want to see if we can get this into the gun groups and start talking about this stuff. Well, we need to fight back. We don't need to just always be on the defensive. Let's make them defend against hearing protection, against a different background check, and against tax deductions for poor folks so they can exercise their rights. Let's put them on the defensive.
Love it. Guys, thank you so much. John, I sent you an email. Check your inbox.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right, guys. Great. Have a good one.
All right. You take care, Candy. Thank you very much. I'm glad I matched you two up. This is working out really well. You're so different, yet you're so in sync. I mean, it's a fascinating thing. You've got to do a workshop together or put out a video or something. And hopefully we'll get you both to our January 7th Citizen Legislation Day because I want to have a gun table and a gun panel, some other things like that. So we've got some of our local folks here as well. But, this is wonderful. All right. Take care, Candy. Teach
all
well.
All right, guys. Bye, guys.
All right. See ya.
Take care. Cool.
All right. So
on
go ahead.
One thing is if they're on our range, they have to wear protection. They don't get an option, and they have to wear the kind we choose. So they don't get to say, hey, we're not going to wear it, or these are going to be fine. But that doesn't happen. That's not a good thing. But, yeah, when it does happen accidentally, so if you're at the range and somebody forgets them and you see it happen, you can tell immediately how important it is. Right. So just based on the reaction.
No, and this is why now suppressors, how much do they suppress? Do you have any charts on that? Have you seen the dB reduction?
They suppress it enough to not do damage to your ear.
Okay.
That's all
you need. So, yeah, we don't need to take away the noise.
You know what they're really useful? It's hunting. Right?
Oh,
if you have a suppressor on your hunting rifle, you can open up your ears to hear the environment. right? You can operate within an environment where your sounds aren't muffled, and then you can actually be more effective and more efficient and safer. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to worry about that shot because it's not going to blow your eardrums out because you've got a suppressor on the gun.
That makes sense. So do people hunt? I want to go hunting at some point. I want to learn how to do it. But I never see anybody wearing, you know, a headset when they're hunting. But you can get a noise canceling where you can hear just fine, except for the gunshot. It'll muffle the gunshot.
Sure. And some do, some don't. A lot more of those earplugs, like you said, the little foam ones. Plenty of hunters out there with a ton of damage because you either forgot to put them in, they weren't in properly. If you mm-hmm. put those things in your ear and you start moving around, they always fall out.
There's a way to do it. I learned years ago back in flight training how to do it. You got to pull your ear back a little bit. You got to roll them up into a tinier thing. You put them in not too far because you got to be able to get them out again. But you put them in, let them expand in your ear. I mean, that's how you do it. And if it makes a good seal, you can hear when it's working, but you can still hear all the sounds. That's the weird thing. You know, I can put in foam earplugs, either those little spiral shaped ones, the orange ones, or just a little, you know, circular, spherical, whatever that word is for round, you know, things. And they work fine too. But you know, like I say, I mean, I've been doing this for years since I was a kid, you know, flying airplanes with them. But they work fine. You know, they work really well. And you can still hear the sounds.
No one knows how to use them properly.
Well, that should be taught, though. That should be a required thing, you know, how to roll up an earplug. You need to just read it's in the instructions, which nobody reads. It's not that hard to figure out how to roll up an earplug. And if you're going to save your hearing, you don't get your hearing back. Once it's gone, it's gone. You know, it doesn't return.
The same people that are wearing iPods at the range.
Oh, please.
Right.
You know, another thing, too. Yeah. The headset's not good enough by itself because if you're wearing glasses or like I do or safety glasses, they're creating a space between the headset. The headset's actually losing efficiency because you wear glasses. You're breaking the seal. It's another reason
for
using the phone.
Yeah, your glasses make a big difference, too. So the actual width of the earpiece makes a big difference, and most people don't realize that either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of factors that go involved, and that's part of the education process, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about that safety aspect and what kind of shoes and how to choose them. And if you wear prescription glasses, you've got to get a pair of glasses, safety glasses that go over those so you can still see. And that changes as well because then you get a double layer. But
see, I've always wore just my prescription glasses. No one's had a problem with just my regular glasses.
Yeah, but are they ballistic rated?
I don't know. Probably not.
So that's not going to help you.
Oh, okay. Tell me.
Glasses is like, so have you ever shot a piece of like a Coke bottle or something?
No.
If you shoot any kind of piece of glass, it's going to break.
Right.
Throw a rock at it, it's going to break. If you were to drop your glasses on the ground and step on them, they would break.
Right.
Right. The protective glasses are rated for impact. So if you hit that with the impact of a round hitting it, it's not going to penetrate the glass to get into your eye.
Okay.
So the safety glasses are there to protect your eye. So if your prescription glasses aren't rated for that, which I'm sure they aren't, unless you special order them, then it's a lot.
No, they wouldn't be.
Yeah, you need a pair of safety goggles to go over your scripts to protect your eyes if something comes back and bites you.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I wondered about that too, but I said, oh, no, it's fine. I was like, okay. You know, me and my trusting nature, but on that particular case, it makes sense. But that's another reason for the foam, for the earplugs and the headset, because the headset, especially if I'm wearing two sets of glasses now, there's going to be more space around that headset. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be as effective.
Sure. And they make some extensions to the foam part on your headphones that bump that out. They increase the padding to help make that seal.
Yeah, I can look more into this. Well, when I get back into shooting in a series, I'd love to get back to something like a competitive level just because it's fun. It's way too much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're coming to the top of the hour here. We've got the third hour. I've got enough material. I can talk to myself. I'd rather talk to you guys. We've got Bianca in the line too. John, do you have some more time or do you have to go?
No, I got time.
Okay, good. Well, I love all this time you have. This is great. Well, take a look at the bills. We can talk more about those. I can get into this article that I had earlier because it actually makes some good points. It makes about, you know, about 8 really good points and about 2 completely stupid ones. I think I'm completely wrong on that. So what time is it now? 8:59 is a good time for us to take a little break. So mute yourselves if you want to make some noise, get some coffee, back in about 4 or 5 minutes. Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. All right, let's get back to News Talk. We're getting a whole lot of static there. I don't know if that was my line or one of your lines, but something sounded weird. Anyway, we're back. Last hour of the week, and so I'm pretty open to anything anybody wants to talk about. I've got lists of different things like that. We can go back to the gun chat. We can talk about the bills, and we can talk about anything in particular. I know John had a discussion of the titles of some of the bills. We can kind of pick up on that. But we got a new speaker. You know, we've got a whole set of priorities. We've got investigations that need to happen. I played the Biden one. That was actually made right before the 2020 election. And so we already had the masks, the mandates, the lockdowns, the closed churches. We'd already seen the worst of government. And I was, I was worried about that election, that it would be stolen, because I knew Trump was going to win it if it was an honest election, and it wasn't. And, of course, we know what's happened ever since then. And so that's it's very interesting that all the things that I predicted, you know, unfortunately have come true. They're all happening. And so that's where we are right now. Anyway, Pianki, John, anyone wants to start to pick up on anything we had before, or introduce something new, feel free. We're wide open for the rest of the hour. Okay, don't all jump at once. Go ahead, John.
So we talked about having 400 million guns in the U.S., right?
Uh-huh.
I looked it up. So in 2021, we had 48,830 gun deaths. And that includes suicides.
Right.
Right. If you divide that by the number of guns, we're talking 1/100 of 1%.
They're actually guns used in a crime? So wait, say that again.
Straight gun deaths. So anytime a gun resulted, use of a firearm resulted in a death, and that includes suicides. So if you break it down to homicides, it's only about 12,000. But if you include suicides and everything else gun-related, it was 48,830.
Yeah, but I wouldn't include suicides. I would just include the criminal use of guns, because that where criminals use them to hurt other people, not people hurting themselves. You can legislate that against that all you want. It's not going to do anything. But
I agree with the left's argument is guns cause problems. Guns are causing suicides. So let's just throw it in there, just for the sake of argument. You're still looking at 1/100 of 1%.
That's amazing.
It is.
That's what I'm saying, because we have so many guns. Yeah, we have so many guns that the actual amount of guns used in crimes, if it were proportional to some countries that have far fewer guns, then this country would be incredibly more violent, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Huh.
So that's what they're not getting. And that's I think, our failure to articulate it.
Right. So is there a study that's been done? This is a really interesting point. So is there I haven't even thought to look it up yet, because we're just, you know, this is the first time really hearing about this. But is there a study that shows the percentage of crimes per percent of or amount of guns owned? Has anybody looked at that?
I don't know. Probably not, I guess. Maybe that would make too much sense, right? They tend not to look at things that have statistical favors to the encouragement of the Second Amendment.
Yeah. Right. So let's take a look at Somalia, Yemen, Honduras, the countries that come to mind. Countries that are known to be violent, right? So the percentage of civilian gun ownership in those countries compared to the amount of violence that's committed. And that would include militia groups, terrorist groups, all that kind of stuff, because they're there. They might as well include them, right, as criminals, as well as terrorists and other things. But if you look at some of those countries, there are far fewer guns in civilian hands, and far more crimes proportionally are being committed in those countries. Would that be fair?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, fair enough. So look at Britain. I mean, you got the UK that outlawed guns for sure, but now outlawed knives, and their knife crimes skyrocketed.
So they outlawed knives and knife crimes skyrocketed?
Because the average person wasn't allowed to use that tool to defend themselves, so there was no check, right? So it's the same thing as gun control. You take away all the guns, who has the guns? The bad guys.
Yeah.
You take away all the knives, who has the knives? The bad guys.
Does that include swords, by the way? I've always wanted to use a sword for self-defense just because of the intimidation factor. I'm serious. No, I'm serious about this. I fenced in college.
I don't think you could have a steak knife in public in the UK.
Really? Well, that's the UK. But I hear that in Florida, for example, and I have to look it up, but in Florida, your concealed carry permit used to also permit knives of longer lengths than people without a concealed carry permit, because I guess they were assuming you were of good character and had a background check, and so it was okay. But if I was going to intimidate somebody, I'd have a katana, you know, in like a shoulder, you know, sheath that I could just draw immediately down upon their body and freak the hell out of them, you know, or just, you know, take off major body parts. That's just me. You know, I mean, if criminals, that's why they use machetes. Nobody wants to be hacked to death. People would rather be, you know, I hate to say it, if we get graphic for a minute, but the idea of being shot is bad enough, but the idea of being hacked with a machete is horrifying.
Yeah, I'd much rather be shot than stabbed.
Yeah. Well, and the stabbing victims you've seen, there's got to be, you know, we're talking lifetime injuries, horrible things have happened, and, you know, in many ways, deadlier than guns.
Sure, it has probably a broader psychological impact as well.
Huh. Yeah, and they've been around for thousands of years. I mean, edged weapons. I mean, like the Japanese, they don't have guns, but, you know, the samurai tradition, you know, the knife and sword tradition goes back thousands of years.
Sure.
And they make really good ones, too. You know, I've seen some actual, you know, Japanese, you know, traditionally made samurai swords. They're unbelievable. But I'd love to have something like that, or an English knight sword. You know, it's like the crocodile Dundee effect, or a really good, you know, what do they call those things? What are those Indian knives? The Gurkha knives, the kukris. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had a kukri with a 14-inch blade on it, you know, I could do crocodile Dundee. Oh, that's not a knife. That's a knife. You know, I mean, I don't know. Is there an intimidation factor that goes along with something like that? You know, mine's bigger,
yep,
so to speak.
Sure, unless you, you know, come across a guy with a gun, and that's a problem.
Well, exactly. Well, you have to have the backup. But I'm just right. Thinking that. If we're going to talk self defense, why would that not be a viable self defense? So you've got your concealed 45 and a somewhat concealed, maybe not, you know, katana on your shoulder that you could draw. That's right by your, you know, your right shoulder. You could just draw it immediately. And I don't know. I'm just thinking. I'm just exploring options here. I know.
Because there are no rules, right? Everything's fair game. Too. I mean, getting out of the car with a, you know, katana on your back is a little difficult.
Well, it would have some kind of a swivel. You know, you think you could keep it in front of you. You know, you'd have to be able to take it off in the car. You know, it wouldn't be useful in the car. That's where you have your cross-draw holster. But once you're out of the car, you put your katana on and off you go. About your business. I don't know. I'm just... If people are carrying swords, it'd be
a
very interesting
for you,
society.
I'm on board.
Yeah. Well, look at Europe.
Well,
I mean, look at the dueling.
Knives, you know.
What's that now?
There's plenty of people that carry knives for self-defense, but it goes back to, you know, what you're going to train with and what you're willing to do with it.
Right. So as knife training as opposed to gun training, how long does it take to get really good to defend yourself with a knife?
Probably a lot longer than it does for a gun.
Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. You can't get people to come to more than one gun class generally. You know, if you're lucky, a couple.
Right.
You're not going to have someone invest, you know, 6 months for a knife training course, you know, once a week or twice a week.
Yeah, because that's art form. That's there's a lot of, you know, it is, that's one of the martial art weapons, and you have to, you know, but defending yourself against a knife, do you teach that?
Yeah, but that takes time too. You know, some of the basic principles are the same. Realistically, you talk to most victims of a knife attack, the vast majority of them think they were actually getting punched. They never even saw the knife.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they just find themselves bleeding and in horrible pain or what?
Yeah, basically they're in the fight, and then when the fight's over, assuming they won the fight, they realize that they're bleeding out.
Wow. And you can bleed out, you know, now that we're on the graphic subjects, I mean, you can bleed out pretty quickly, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, depending where they hit you, absolutely.
Right.
And it doesn't take much. I mean, really, if you look at even your lungs, you can puncture a lung pretty quickly, and it takes about a half inch of the blade, maybe an inch.
Right.
It has to be a deep cut, you know. So it's, yeah, that's why I'd rather get shot than stabbed. But usually in the fight, in that moment, the vast majority of people don't even know they're getting stabbed. They're
Interesting.
Just getting punched.
Huh. Cause, and that's part of the technique is that you don't show that you have a blade so people don't realize it?
I think it's just the chaos and the melee of the fight.
Right.
So it's not even these guys are trained. I mean, you look at most bad guys, they're not trained. They're just operating like a, you know, sewing machine. They're just keep, you know, stabbing the guy. But it's always going to feel like a punch if you don't know what the initial thing in their hand is.
Hmm.
You know, you just think they're getting hit.
Interesting. Yeah. Gets complicated.
Yeah.
Okay. Other issues. We've got a bunch of us. You want to go back to those gun laws at all, or the titles of them?
Yeah, for sure. One other thing I was going to talk about, the stats, though. We talked about the defensive use of a handgun stats.
Uh-huh.
There's a reason those are skewed, and nobody knows what they are. It's because they're not keeping track of them, and they should be. And it's not hard to do. So have you ever filled out a police report or had a police report taken?
Yeah, because I had, I think my tires were slashed. And I had my car stolen. Yeah, so I've done a couple of them.
Did you have to fill it out yourself?
I don't remember.
Okay. Usually
probably
if you look
not.
At them, there's a lot of check boxes, right? They're, most of them are check boxes. So daytime, nighttime, location, was the car locked? What was the environment? What, you know, was it residential? Was it commercial? Was it? You can go down the list. Well, all those check boxes are designed for statistics, so they can track those things.
Oh,
how easy would it be? Yeah, how easy would it be to add, was a defensive use of a weapon used? What type of weapon? Handgun, knife, stick, whatever, and just check the boxes. So they can actually keep track of those things fairly accurately, but they don't, because if you look at it on its face, probably conservative estimates is well over a million times a year in this country.
Oh, I've heard half a million to 3 million defensive uses, according to our stats here that we just read earlier.
Yeah, so I would estimate that probably conservatively at least a million. Half a million is low. It's not just – most of those aren't even a shot being fired. It's just the display of the gun. It's the actual person having possession of it. You could track that fairly easily. They don't want to track it because that just makes the argument. If you only have 48,000 deaths, including suicides, due to a firearm, but you have 3 million uses of a handgun or a firearm where it was effective, that makes your case. So they don't want those stats out there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, same thing too with automobile fatalities, which are what, 80 to 100,000 a year? Some ridiculous number.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So that might be a bill, mandatory reporting.
Of
defensive use of handguns. Anytime a firearm is used, whether commission of a crime or the prevention of a crime, you have to make it. You have to report it, and it has to be documented, and it has to be kept track of.
That's really interesting. And so that's not being done at all? No one's documenting defensive uses at all? I didn't know that.
No, it's all anecdotal. It's anecdotal.
Huh. Well, in that case, I think we need another bill, John. You want to add that to your list, your growing list of bills? And I'll help you with them. We can farm them out to other folks. But we just need to if you could just keep a list of our proposed gun bills, that would help. I can do it too. So mandate reporting of defensive gun use. Okay. Let me go over, since we're on guns, we've got about 40 minutes left. Let me go through this article because it does cover a bunch of things. I'm trying to write and talk at the same time. That's an interesting skill, by the way. Hopefully I don't say something really stupid as I'm doing this. Mandate report, defensive gun use. There we go. So back to our article in the National Interest. They break things up and they ask questions. And then the first question is, how big is the threat to public safety from guns and mass public shootings? This is mass public shootings, that's redundant, devastate communities, and their random nature has profound effects on our feelings of safety in public places. That's very true. They're a well-publicized phenomenon, but they remain an incredibly small threat to any one individual. They account for only a fraction of the 1% of all gun deaths every year. That's interesting. Contrary to popular talking points by gun control advocates, the United States does not have a particularly extraordinary problem with mass public shootings compared with other developed countries after accounting for population differences. Moreover, in the other developed countries, bombings, mass stabbings, and car attacks frequently kill more people than even the deadliest mass shootings in the United States. That's interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Pianki, you want to get in this conversation? I know you're out there still. You don't have to. You can listen. I'm just curious. This one gave you the opportunity. He's there. Okay, fine. He's probably making coffee. Next section, what is the role of mental illness? All the things we talked about on the show, we pretty much covered, this article covers, but it's just interesting their take on it, all in one place. It says, most mentally ill individuals are not and will never become violent. That I find interesting. Most mentally ill individuals are not and will never become violent. So that sort of negates the idea that mental illness is necessarily the problem or the solution. It says violent, especially when they are, they'll never become violent, especially when they are receiving proper treatment. So treatment, I understand. That makes sense. But my contention is, if you're too dangerous to have a gun, you're too dangerous to have a car. You're too dangerous to be out in society. You're too dangerous to do a lot of things, like have a steak knife. So it's all or nothing with me. You know, either you have all your rights or none of your rights. So you cannot take away from felons the right to own firearms or the right to vote, because you can't be selective about rights. That's unconstitutional under the 14th Amendment Equal Protection. If you're too dangerous to be in society for whatever reason, then you should be in jail. And if you're out, then you should have all your rights. I don't like this kind of quasi-in-out sort of area, because it just seems like a way to increase, you know, gun control on previous felons. But it doesn't make any sense if you let them out but not have guns, because they still have access to violent means. John, what do you think?
No, I agree 100%. I don't think you can take their rights away once they've, you know, paid their dues or served their penalties to society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that if they're out on bail, or if they're out on not so much bail, but
parole,
probation, that's a condition of their release.
That's,
yeah,
different.
They're
still not released yet.
Right.
Because the argument is violent felons, they might do it again. Yeah, they might. But in other words, it comes under this prevention idea again, that we can stop people ahead of time for what they might do. And as Candy said, it was a brilliant line. She says that you cannot take away someone else's rights that also take away my rights at the same time, because the rights of the individual are paramount. And government cannot be in business of predicting and preventing necessarily crime. How much, when you're a police officer, how much instruction did you get in how to prevent crimes? I mean, obviously your presence, things like that. I'm not talking about that, but specific means. You know, if you do this, this crime will stop, kind of thing.
Not a ton. It usually revolved around our presence or impacting an area, but it wasn't
okay.
Necessarily a preemptive. Hey, towards the tail end, they started doing more like neighborhood watch, things like that, and trying to educate the public.
Mm-hmm.
As far as that went, and they started those programs up. I think a lot of those have fallen by the wayside, to be honest, now because of
what's
going
bad.
On. But it initially, though, it was more our job was to arrest the bad guy, and our job was to be a presence if we were there to avoid something happening. But really, cops don't have a legal duty to protect anybody.
Yeah,
they have a duty to arrest the bad guy and take a report, and that's about it. And most people don't realize that either.
I know.
But I,
rhetorical
article,
question.
I think you've got to look at the stats,
ahead.
How they keep the stats as well. So they were talking about, you know, the mass murders and things like that. Well, you know, initially when they first termed the active shooter and they were classifying those things, it revolved around, it was either 4 or 6 people killed in a confined location without a cooling off period. And that was like the standard. But since then they've changed that to, I think, 4 or more people killed or injured.
Mm-hmm.
Within that,
I think it's 3 now,
and
I think Obama lowered it to 3, so they could increase the so it makes it look worse than it really is.
And what they're doing is they're lumping it all in. So they're lumping the gang problems in, they're actually lumping domestic violence in. I just saw an article today where a lady was advocating, talking about how we've had all these mass shootings and mass killings and all these things since an epidemic, but the stat list they used, a full third of them were domestic violence related, where it was family members going in and killing everybody in the family and then killing themselves.
Yeah.
By definition.
Which is a problem, but it's not.
Absolutely.
But
it's not an active shooter.
Yeah.
It's not an epidemic that they're attributing to the active shooter problem. Right. So the article's right. It's a very small number when you break it down to realistic terms and statistics.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of the Crime Research Institute by John Lott?
I've heard John Lott. I don't know a specific name of it, but that's interesting.
Yeah, so he runs that. They're the only ones doing accurate research.
Are you in contact
really
with him by any chance? I've always wanted to get him on the show.
I'm not, but I want to reach out to him. He's actually in Missoula, which is a couple hours away from us.
Okay.
So that's one of my
to-do lists.
To kind of reach out and talk to him. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Yeah, we give an hour. If we could have this hour, this third hour of the show, if he wants to come on, I'm sure we can talk candy into staying around too. Because it'd be great. But that'd be fascinating to have John Lott on the show. And let's ask him real questions, because he gets like usually 3 minutes to try and explain something that takes 45 minutes, and he never gets a chance to explain anything. I want to give him that chance.
Right. And I think that's a great part of your show, is at least you give people time to get that out and get a full answer out, as opposed to, like you said, that 30-second soundbite, and then they're moving on.
Yeah, except when I interrupt people, which I'm trying to get to stop, but I get so excited I want to say things. that's why I got into this job in the first place. Let's take the next one, mental illness. I started that one. It says, most mentally ill individuals are not and will never become violent, especially when they are receiving proper treatment. However, despite recent attempts by some in the media to remove any connection between mental health and gun-related violence, untreated serious mental illness is a significant contributing factor in two important subjects of gun violence. See, this is like a semi-liberal article, so I disagree with the term gun violence. It's violence. It's not a gun crime. It's a crime. It's not a mass public shooting. It's a public murder. So you always want to have the emphasis in the words on the person, not on the gun, because then if you demonize the gun, then taking away the guns becomes the solution, and that's why they do it. Anyway, it says, analysis routinely shows that about 25% of those who commit mass public shootings were previously diagnosed with a mental illness, while roughly two-thirds had a significant psychiatric history. Moreover, the majority of annual gun deaths in the United States are the result of suicides, which is what you said earlier, which are inherently a mental health-related concern. So let's kind of dive into this pool once again here, the idea of, in fact, if you weren't mentally unhealthy, why would you kill a bunch of people? I mean, that's almost redundant, isn't it?
Yeah, but by definition, right? It's a mental problem.
Right.
Right.
So given that it's a mental problem, but is it something the government can prevent or even should try to? Or, again, you arrest people after they commit a crime. Have you ever arrested somebody before they committed a crime?
Yes. That's the conspiracy. So technically, conspiracy is a crime. If you're conspiring to commit a crime, you can arrest that person for that crime. Right.
How far along in the crime do they have to be before it's a conspiracy?
There's got to be an act of furtherance. You and I can't get together and talk about overthrowing the government and never do anything about it.
Right. Right?
That's not a conspiracy. If you and I start talking about overthrowing the government, then we start collecting ammunition, then we go to a bunch of maps and we start scouting locations, and then we make a dry run at it. There's a case to be made that there's several acts of furtherance in that crime to make
it
happen.
So there's intent. Yeah.
Yes.
So if some idiot blasts on Facebook, I want to overthrow the government, man, I want to start over. That's just stupid, but it's not illegal.
No, I agree. But so our very first conversation, we talked about that poor guy that got killed by the feds for posting on Facebook that he was going to put on a ghillie suit. The guy was disabled.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example. There was no intent there. There was no act of furtherance there. That was just someone rambling online, being stupid, and they took it to the next level. That, I think, that's not a conspiracy. That's illegal, what they did, not him.
No, but I agree. Absolutely. I mean, they want to make an example of him. I know why they did it. The thing is, they need to be brought up on charges for it. They need to be personally
accountable.
But that
would be the difference between a conspiracy or an act of furtherance and not having
money. Right.
Right.
So in other words, you can drive by a bank and go, there's a lot of money in there, man. We could rob that bank. That's not a conspiracy. But if you, like I say, if you draw the bank plans, you look at the schedules and you check the time locks and things like that, now you're kind of intent. Well, let's talk about it in terms of armed robbery. When does an armed robbery become an armed robbery? It's like a bank robbery. You're driving to a bank with a gun, which people do all the time when they carry in. I don't know how many people open carry in banks. That's an interesting thought. Anyway, but concealed carry, people do it all the time. I do it. No big deal.
Sure.
But I'm just saying, at what point does carrying a gun into a bank become a crime where the gun gets added to the crime? Do you actually have to physically draw it and threaten somebody? Or just carrying a gun to a bank with the intent of robbing it, is that an additional crime with a gun?
Right. So it kind of boils down to intent. So they have what's called the AOJ triangle, AOJ, ability, opportunity, and jeopardy.
Okay.
You have to have all three for the crime, essentially.
Hmm.
So you have to have the ability to commit the crime. You have to have an opportunity to commit the crime, but you also have to put somebody in jeopardy, right? So a security guard in a bank is a good example. He has the ability, he has the opportunity, but there's no jeopardy because he's there to protect the bank. you walk in as a concealed carry holder into a bank, you mm-hmm. have the ability, the opportunity, but there's no jeopardy.
Right.
Another guy walks into the bank with a gun, puts on a ski mask, and hands the teller a note. There's your jeopardy.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. if he's driving to the bank, he's already made the plans. He's got his ski mask. He's got the gun in the car. He's got the getaway bag, you know, secured. He's parked out in front with the engine running, and you pull that guy over, stop and talk to him. You could mm-hmm. make the case that he was planning on robbing the bank.
Right.
Did he rob the bank yet? No. But you'd probably arrest him for that bank robbery. Now, whether it sticks or not is irrelevant, but the fact that he was there, he had that active presence, he had the ability, he had the opportunity, and there was jeopardy involved is enough to make the prima facie case that there was a crime going to be committed.
Yeah, I would agree, too. Like, again, intent, you know, demonstrated intent. I don't know if that's a legal term or not, but that seems to be where this is going. My concern with the mental illness is that I think it's a given that people that commit these kind of crimes are mentally ill, whether it's suicide or public murder. I mean, normal people don't do that. They just don't. So it's kind of stupid to say that there's a mental health problem, because of course it's a mental health problem. But the question is, you know, do you the government in a position to determine in advance, you know, who they should or give them permission to take guns away? And I would say no. You know, you really have to come down to, in a free society, you have to commit a crime before action can be taken against you. Now, if the family wants to get involved, if the family says, hey, we're going to take your guns, you know, you're not really, you know, that's different. You know, and I'm not sure how to do this. It's a tough line, because you want to, you know, nobody wants to see people hurt or killed. On the other hand, the problem is that the government is going to take away the rights of millions more people in the process of preventing maybe one crime. And that's the greater crime. Maybe. I mean, it's just, you know, you can't really relate them. Anyway, it's a messy issue.
No, I agree. It's a slippery slope, and it's a hard one to define. I think if you've got an extreme case, like let's say Maine, mm-hmm. there's a pretty good case to be made that there was a reason to probably seize that person's firearms, at least temporarily, and allow them due process
mm-hmm.
at that point. So the minute he gets out of the hospital and they say, hey, you're okay, then there should be a procedure in place for him to step into court that day, have it adjudicated, give him at least a public defender or an attorney to help defend himself, and move from there. So I think there's some extreme cases where you could make the argument where it's reasonable,
mm-hmm.
basically. But it's got to be an extreme case. It shouldn't be the norm.
It has
to have a very, very high standard. There has to be a very high bar for that to happen. It's not the guy coming in who says, you know, I'm having a bad day and I'm depressed because my wife just left me.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to take a civil liberties away. Probably not. The guy that comes in and says, hey, I'm hearing voices from these two locations, and they're telling me to kill people there, and I have access to all of these guns, and I'm a National Guard person reservist.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably a pretty clear, convincing case that, well, at least temporarily, let's get this guy help, figure out what's going on. If he gets the right help, hey, give him back. If he doesn't get the right help or he's institutionalized, then we'll keep him until he's out and fixed.
That makes sense. In other words, it comes to me, demonstrated intent. So if you're saying you're hearing voices, and most of these people demonstrate intent ahead of time. So if you're demonstrating intent to do something, then I believe that it's right to be able to step in. My problem is that the government's going to start saying that you have to prove your mental health before you can get guns. And they're going to start evaluating, and they're going to use that to take guns. And that's my big fear, is that instead of using it to prevent crimes, they're going to use it to prevent gun ownership, which is what the CDC wants us to do. That's where it becomes a problem. Let me get to another section here, which is interesting. It says, is white nationalism to blame? Okay. First of all, that term is a racist term. I dispute it to begin with, because you never hear about black nationalism or Hispanic nationalism or things like that. So it's definitely a pejorative term. But it's in the article, so let's go with it. It says, white nationalism, like all ideologies that promote violence and divide humanity on the basis of race, I would just call that racism myself. It's not white nationalism. It's got nothing to do with the nation. It's got nothing to do with the United States. But anyway, given that, it says, white nationalism is an abhorrent belief system that is rightly condemned. Okay, well, all racism should be condemned. Then it says some mass public shootings have been carried out in the name of white nationalism. I'd love to see one and see what that is exactly. This is both in the United States and internationally. It says that includes the recent one in El Paso. This is why white nationalism constitutes a real threat to the American public. It is not, however, the driving force behind most public shootings. We're going to talk about this term in a minute, because this is quite interesting to me. This is only, but the article says only a small subset of such shooters is motivated by their ideological beliefs, and many different types of extremist philosophies have been used to commit acts of domestic terrorism in the United States. Yeah, Islam. Okay. Anyway, this is the threat of white nationalism should not be ignored, but neither should it be treated as the greatest danger facing Americans. It's like they're trying to be balanced, but I dispute the whole term white nationalism, but that's you know, part because I'm a white guy. It seems to me a very insulting and inaccurate term, because nationalism is a good thing. You know, Franklin Roosevelt was a nationalist who saved our butts in World War II. Of course, he might have helped get us into it, but that's another story. He was a white nationalist. He was a nationalist who happened to be white. So this is a really bad term. Did you get any kind of, shall I say, indoctrination of this in law enforcement? Did they talk about this kind of stuff?
Not in my time. No, they do now, but not in my time now. No.
What did they say now from folks you know? I'm curious.
Well, now it's talked about all the time because that's all you hear. So it's offensive to be a nationalist in general if you're American, because we're in a society where there's not supposed to be any pride, any value in your country. You're supposed to be just like everybody else, if not worse than everybody else.
Right.
That's what they're teaching everybody, unfortunately. Huh. Now, whether it's true or not, it's not true. We all know it's not true. But that's what they're teaching everybody. But when you have the premier law enforcement agencies in the country, like supposedly the FBI and the ATF, saying that's the number one threat to our country, and you have all of these police agencies falling in line with that, that's what you're going to get.
Why would they fall in line with that? Especially the white agencies, probably white. Take a white town, you know, and they're going to say that white nationalism is the problem, especially when most of the people there are white, whatever that town might be. That just seems kind of stupid to me.
I agree, but it's political correctness, and if you're looking at people, like sheriffs are elected, so if
right.
you're going to get elected in an area, you got to play the political game. But honestly, police and chiefs are, you know, chosen by the city council, by their cities.
Right.
Right. So you it's all political. Then you add funding into that, where the government's going to hand out cash to fund these programs and to fund your department. If you go
oh, okay,
the program,
there we go. Yeah.
You're getting a lot of money. So follow the money. Break it down. You always follow the money, and you'll understand what's going on.
There's an interesting article. Actually, it was a report done by Andrew Edrzynski of Open the Books. He talked about the militarization of America and the huge amount of surplus military material that has ended up in police agencies. I got a problem with some of that because some of these things are pretty extreme. I have a principle which I call defense equity. So in other words, if the police can, then the law-abiding citizens can too. Not that we need to run down the street in an armored car necessarily, but the point is that that these agencies are, you know, police agencies are really well armed. And back in the days when they could asset forfeiture without conviction, back in the 80s, they were confiscating all kinds of things, boats, airplanes, you know, all kinds of weapons and things like that. And so do you see that still, that some agencies might be overarmed? What do you think?
Yes and no. I don't think they're overarmed, but I think it's a trend to militarize the police in such a way that it might be useful.
That might
right?
be more
I
dangerous.
Think they,
okay, interesting.
Yeah, I think that, well, part of it's training. Part of it's optics, mm-hmm. and part of it's ego, right? Mm. You know, especially cops, they want to look cool. They want to look like they're operators, right? SWAT teams are a good example. You know, they went from being a normal SWAT team with, you know, a little bit of up armor and handling certain threats with certain tools to now mm-hmm. they look like full military guys.
Yeah,
with,
commandos.
You know, battering rams.
It's weird,
and,
yeah.
You know, basically armored vehicles to handle problems where 95% of those problems shouldn't be handled that way.
Yeah.
Right. It goes back to the surrounding call out. Right? The chances of you having to use a battering ram or an armored vehicle in most situations are pretty slim.
Yeah.
But
most
but
doors
they
can
like
be kicked
it.
In.
New tool.
Yeah. Interesting.
Sure. But I get it, you know, but you do run the risk of becoming a militarized zone inside your own city, which wasn't what the founders had in mind.
You know, I actually met a cop that said that they weren't civilian, that they were paramilitary. I said, no, you're not. You're civilian. You know, military, you're in the military. You know, you take an oath. You're under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. But if you're a cop, you're under civilian law. You're acting as a civilian. Yeah, you're a sworn law enforcement officer. But is that taught? Have these people lost sight of who they are?
Yeah, to some extent. But they've always considered themselves different, right? I get it.
Well, special, different, I understand that, but a paramilitary force, a military force? No.
Right. But I agree. But that goes back to ego, and that goes back to, you know, what you're teaching, what you're getting into the job for.
Right.
So they consider the academy paramilitary. You know, you have to march, you have to stand at attention, you have to stand in a straight line. They do a lot
marching
of
band.
Right.
They marching
they do
band
a lot
college.
Of semi-military yeah. things in the academy.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, you know, you do need some of that discipline, and you do need some mm-hmm. of that training, but you also, you can take that to an extreme that's probably not appropriate, not good for the level. You know?
No, I understand.
But when you talk
I
about
training,
you talk
that
about
makes
nationalism,
sense.
Mm-hmm. you know, nationalism is just identifying with your country and looking out for its best interest. But so Black History Month is a nationalist movement for blacks, right? You look at whatever month they put out there, whether it's, you know, the Gay Pride Month, whatever, you name the month, that's a form of nationalism just for that group. It just, when it comes to white people, it's racist.
Well, is it nationalism or is it more for the group itself? Because I don't think, you never see an LGBT PMS group, American Gay Alliance, or we are the Patriot Lesbian Club. You know, you don't see that.
Right, but they consider themselves a nation within a nation.
That's a problem. That's segregation.
I agree. And that's what's destroying the country, because we're no longer a melting pot. They're not assimilating to America. They're considering themselves outside the boundaries of America. And each one of these individual groups is doing the same thing. And that's what they're accusing white people of doing, right? Mm-hmm. They're accusing the whites to do it. They're accusing everybody to do it. And the Muslim terrorist acts is a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's killing for nationalism, right? They're protecting their nation. They're protecting their way of life, their religion, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but Islam is not a nation. It's certainly not in this country. That's the Constitution is the supreme law of the land where they have jurisdiction. You know, the states are supreme to, you know, the federal government. The principles of this country are individual rights, freedom, limited government, and we're a republic. And that's how the country works. So if you're trying to overthrow that and say that that's somehow bad, everything I talked about was nationalist, because that relates to the nation. The nation has founding documents and founding principles. That's what this nation is. So it's actually, to be a nationalist is a good thing. The people that aren't nationalists are the problem.
If you break it down, they're a separate group and they are trying to break that down. If you look at the gay community, they're a separate group and they are trying to break down our country. The left as a whole, the Democrats mm-hmm. as a whole, they are anti-American. They consider themselves separate and they want to break down the country.
Yeah, so I always figured the biggest terrorist group in the country is the Democrat Party. But we'll talk about that sometime too. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You agree. Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
They're wholly responsible for the vast majority of the violence that's going on and the problems that are going on.
Yeah, I was just thinking how much easier lives would be without Democrats, you know, if we could dissolve the party and have them just, you know, send them to, American education camp. Just get a good lesson in the Constitution, freedom, individual rights, what this country's founded on, and go do something productive with your lives and stop being Democrats. You know, it'd be great. Then we can get rid of the Republican Party, too, because you don't need a supportive party you don't need a beta party to the alpha Marxists. They talk about assault weapons in this thing, too, and this is an interesting thing. It says, are assault weapons the problem? Now, we all know that term doesn't exist, and they actually acknowledge that. They say the term assault weapon is purposely vague and has no definitive meaning, but generally refers to guns that have features associated with semi-automatic rifles, such as the AR-15. Well, that's a whole difference from what used to be known as an assault rifle, the Sturmgewehr. We'll talk about that in a minute, too. Anyway, it says, despite recent claims that these are, quote, dangerous weapons of war with no legitimate civilian function, these firearms are owned by millions of Americans who regularly use them for lawful purposes, including self-defense, as we know with that church thing. And it says they are also standard-issue firearms for law enforcement officers who use them every day to respond to threats in the civilian context. These types of firearms are the least likely to be used in violent crime. Say that again, least likely to be used in violent crime, with rifles of any kind accounting for only 3% of all firearm-related homicides in the United States every year, despite common assertions that the semi-automatic rifles are, quote, weapons of choice for mass shooters, the majority of mass shootings are carried out with handguns alone. I found that interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, one, assault's a verb, not a noun. It's an action.
Thank you for that. That makes perfect sense, yeah. Yeah,
it
it's
like
okay for cops to have them because
Hold on, Pianki. I'll get
that
you in a second.
Like a conspiracy to deny Americans of their Second Amendment rights. Lock them up.
Well, it is, absolutely. I want to consider that in a second, but let's just talk about the whole idea of an assault weapon. I want to get back to that point. That's a good point. John?
Yeah, so like I said, it's a verb, not a noun, but law enforcement has it because they consider paramilitary. Right.
Oh, that's interesting. See, I think of
so it's more acceptable for them to have it than it is for a civilian. But those are truly
well,
that is the most versatile platform ever made. That platform for an AR-15 style weapon will accommodate a child all the way through an adult, disabilities, size, shape. You can customize that gun to fit you perfectly across the board. That's why it's so useful for everybody, because anybody can shoot it. Anybody can make it fit them. So it's the difference between, you know, you've got a handgun that's a micro compact that shoots like, you know, really hard because it's so damn snappy versus a 44 Magnum. You can't modify those much. You take an AR-15 platform, you can modify that to the hilt, the weight, the size, the shape, the length, the pull, you name it, across the board to make that the perfect gun for you. Pianki could have a totally different gun that's perfect for him. Candy could have one that's perfect for her and her, what does she have, 15 kids?
12.
Could each have one that would fit them. No, 12.
That we
could
know
fit
of.
Each
that
one of
kidding.
Them perfectly.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the beauty of that system, is it's so versatile and so universal. You can make that fit everybody at any point in time.
Well, to get to Bianchi's point, when I was in the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, they have a T-shirt, which I still have on my wall, which says, never let go of your life preserver. And it's a ship life preserver, one of those round things. And in the middle of it is an AR-15. The most useful rifle for resisting tyrannical governments is a semi-automatic rifle, particularly the AR-15. So not only is it useful for personal self-defense, it's also useful against tyrannical governments for the same reason they have. It's useful for the police. It really is useful for everybody, which is quite fascinating. I need to get one. How do you clean the gas tubes, or do you just not do that? I was always wondering how you clean the gas tubes on an AR-15. Do you clean the gas tubes on an AR-15?
It's a longer story. There's some breakdown involved and things like that.
Okay.
But
you don't have to do
it
all the time.
The Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is, you know, really, we should have better weapons than the government.
Yeah,
whatever
yeah,
the government
at least on defense
has,
equity.
We should be a step above that, because the whole point of the Second Amendment was to be able to overthrow a tyrannical government. God forbid that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
The fact that they're only allowing us to have subpar weapons based on what they have is a problem. So
well, let's bring Pianki back in.
A good example, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
You think you've got an AR-15? Well, we've got tanks and we've got planes and we've got bombs and we've got nukes. That's their attitude.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, we kind of jump all over each other here. It's kind of a common practice. I try and keep the conversation straight, but you never know. Pianki, let's get back to what you're talking about with the AR-15s and the Second Amendment. Well, I'm getting back to you because I didn't want to dismiss your point, but you're talking about the AR-15 and the Second Amendment, and I would like to talk about this idea of a weapon of war. I mean, any weapons, any gun can be a weapon of war. The Second Amendment doesn't say, you know, the government, you know, shall not infringe except for weapons of war. I mean, they just make this stuff up. Or when they make up saying that the Second Amendment doesn't apply outside the home. Well, who the hell thought of that? What kind of idiot are you? You know, that's nonsense. They're just making up conditions. So, or like
well,
white nationalists.
Person that make up, a person uh-huh. that level that type of excuse should be charged with conspiracy to deny people of the Second Amendment right.
Yeah, Title 18, Section 241, by the way, is one of the most useful and underused laws in the country. But what's a weapon of war, John? For a rhetorical question.
Everything.
Yeah.
Right. There's no limit to a weapon of war, right? Historically, you know, Vietnam, a weapon of war was a bamboo stick.
Yeah. Yeah, don't we use accountants in war? I mean, don't they have to keep track of the ammo? I mean, we use accountants, right? They're a weapon of war, aren't they? If I can take an absurd case. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. now lawyers in the State Department, the DOJ, the ATF, and the FBI are weapons of war.
Yeah, they're certainly causing
war with the American people. Well, they're war with the American people.
And this is another problem that we need to talk about too, the surveillance state, that the government uses superior weapons to intimidate. They are spying on us. They really consider us the enemy. Did you see that starting when you were in law enforcement, and how's it looking now?
As far as the government considering us the
As far as government considering the people the enemy. I mean, I wrote an article called The Nation of Government, still my favorite one, considering where people in Washington, D.C. consider themselves their own country. And that we are just the colonies. That we are the colonies that feed them, that pay the taxes to them. They're in charge. They are the elite. They are the natural governing force. They're the ones in control. And they consider anything that threatens their power, in other words, us, you know, like by voting, is a threat to their power. So therefore, we become the enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why you're looking at gun control, right? You mm-hmm. can't control a population without taking the guns away first. Nazism, communism, socialism, go down the list.
Right.
Right. The first thing they do is take away people's ability to protect themselves against the government, and then it goes downhill from there.
So, well, yeah, at what point would people actually resist, though? Because my problem is that, you know, people say, well, we got 400 million guns out there, and the government has a lot fewer. But they do have 287,000 armed bureaucrats. That's an army of over 12 divisions, bureaucrats. You know, some of the ancient wars, we're talking Piyaki ancient history that, you know, yesterday, that some of the ancient armies were nowhere near as big as that. I mean, that's a huge force.
No.
So at what point, you know, I mean, the Nazis took over Germany with 2% of the population being in the Nazi party, but they were organized. See, the problem is the government's organized and they can order people to do things and they'll do it because the people that join government that would kill fellow Americans, those are the kind of people that serve in government, you know, that are armed. And that's the problem. They believe this propaganda. They believe this stuff.
Well, yeah, and the bigger problem now is they control the flow of information on top of it.
Yeah, that is a big problem.
Right. And yeah, I agree that the people in the government have no heart and no soul, and they're more than willing to let us die, you know, to prove their point or make what they want done. And this last shooting might be a good example of that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they've got no issues with that at all. Historically, though, look at the revolution. I mean, we had – that's where the term 3%ers came from. Only 3% of the population fought.
Yeah.
So it's not going to take a lot, but it will take some, and it will take probably a flashpoint. And the problem I think we're having is we're getting closer to that flashpoint.
Yeah, see, that's why I want to get Action Radio out there in our bills, because, you know, in the argument between ballots and bullets, there's a third option. That's bills. We actually change the laws and take away their power.
Sure.
And so that's my whole goal here. Whether successful or not, we're going to find out. Let me do a couple more of these. We're almost out of time here. It says, can universal background checks prevent these shootings? So federal law already requires that background checks be conducted prior to the vast majority of firearm purchases or transfers. And we talked about our bill that changes that procedure. It says, further, is it a federal crime to sell or transfer firearms to someone you know is prohibited from possessing them, regardless of whether the law mandated that you first perform a background check? Universal background checks would require private citizens to pay a federally licensed firearms dealer to conduct a background check prior to any transfer of a firearm to another person, with limited exceptions for permanent transfers between family members. Expanding background checks would not have prevented a single mass public shooter in recent history from obtaining firearms. Let me say that again. Expanding background checks would not have prevented a single mass shooter from getting guns. Would-be mass public shooters rarely have disqualifying criminal or mental health histories, meaning they often can and do pass background checks when legally purchasing their firearms. So generally, what was really happening is the crime that you see with the mass public shooting, it's usually the first crime, and a lot of times it's their last crime because they're killed at the scene or they commit suicide. So this really is a one-time thing, right?
Right. But so that's the equivalent of a poll tax.
Oh, explain
more
that.
People.
Well, because nobody – so a poll tax, right, you have to pay a tax to go to the polls and vote.
Right.
What they're doing is they're backdooring a tax by making you pay for a background check, by making you pay for licensing, by making you pay for fingerprinting, by making you pay for all of these things. They are taxing your ability to exercise your Second Amendment right.
Right. And that's what I tried to reverse with that bill. Yeah, okay.
So if you put it in terms of a poll tax, people can relate to that. Right.
No, that's a good idea. That's a good point. It makes perfect sense. Yeah, I have to include that. Pianchi?
Yeah, background check. If I come to you to buy a weapon, I give you my name and you know, maybe Social Security. You look at a list, and if it's not on there, I'm ready to go.
That's what our bill does. That's what our bill does, but we also include a photo ID because for the John Smiths of the world, there's going to be a John Smith on there somewhere on the prohibited list. You know, so you have to make it so that you can distinguish between people of the same name, and that's why the photo ID. But so yeah, you just compare it. You just see if their name and their photo ID is on the list. If they're not on the list, they can buy whatever they want. And the government has no business in that transaction. I mean, the last little part here. It says, at the same time, these policies, and these are universal background checks, would place significant burdens on law-abiding gun owners making low-risk firearms transfers and may even encourage unsafe firearm ownership practices by creating unreasonable barriers to those common low-risk firearm transfers. What are they talking about? What's a low-risk firearm transfer? Can you give me an example, John?
That would be me giving a gun to my kid.
Okay.
Right, or a family member. So they want to regulate family member transactions as well. So if I were to say, okay, look, I bought a rifle. I want my kid to have this hunting rifle. I want to give it mm-hmm. to him. They wanted me to have him go through a background check, pay all mm-hmm. those fees, and then be able to give him that. What they further want me to do really is to take that to an FFL, have him hold the gun until the transfer is complete, and then give it to him.
Yeah, see, that's crazy. We're talking about an honest right. transfer of something between, you know, law-abiding people, unless you're a criminal giving it to another criminal. But that's a whole different – that's a criminal activity. That's a whole different thing.
And
then
they're
not going
to do it
for the background anyway. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Right. So, yeah, it would solve nothing. It's prohibitive. Plus, yeah. part of the problem, too, is the process. So every process is a little different depending on your state.
Right.
So I go to buy a gun in Montana. They mm-hmm. make a phone call. The phone call is the background check over the phone with the feds. They say yes or no, and I get my gun that day. California,
well,
you've got to get fingerprinted, a 10-day yeah. wait period, plus the background check.
Well, if it's a federal check, why can't you buy a gun out of state? You go to the same department.
I agree.
You know, like anything else, if I buy a product that's cheaper in another state, like gasoline, say I drive across the Alabama line because I want to go to, you know, buy gas and save, you know, 10 cents a gallon. I can buy gas out of state. Why can't I buy that's a legal product. Why can't I buy them in any state I want? I don't get it. Mail order.
No, I agree. But yeah. it's the whole thing. All gun laws are restrictive in violation of the Second Amendment on its face.
Yep.
It's just
yep. all gun control is illegal.
It's another impediment. Yeah, it's another impediment to discourage you from doing it. And like they said, it adversely affects lower income communities. Because they don't have the extra resources to afford all the extra stuff.
That's why the tax credit idea. So it actually doesn't cost people anything. It just costs the government. Pianchi, do you have a point on that? I got more than that's red flag laws.
Well, there needs to be a constitutional amendment that amends the Second Amendment to be more inclusive to meet all these excuses that they're trying to throw on it today to deny people of owning a gun.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it in the Constitution. Remember, constitutions restrict government. A statutory law would make more sense, but we just don't pass these laws, or we repeal them.
Well, you can't have a statutory law more stringent than the Constitution.
No, I know that. Well, actually, no, you can't. Yeah, you can't have a law that affects your rights. But in other words, if you're going to say that I've got the 90-second warning. Bye, Marco. Have a great week. Yeah. If you're going to have a law that these things cannot be used, you know, for gun control, does that? So I don't want to burden constitutions. You keep them as close as possible to be applied through laws, courts, and legislators.
See, laws have sunsets.
No, not all of them. But
we're going to have a big meeting tomorrow, a regional meeting with the convention and state, and that's going to be some of the proposals that's going to be thrown out there on the table additionally.
Okay. Well, tell me about them next week. I'd be curious to know what's going on. Let me give you the last one here. We're in overtime now, but that's okay. This won't take long. What are red flag laws, and should Americans be concerned? Mass public shooters have long histories of troubling behaviors that everyone around them recognized as indicating that person was a serious criminal. Rarely, however, are official actions taken that would disqualify would-be mass public shooters from lawful firearms possession. It's interesting, lawful problem, but anyway. Often that's because these individuals have not yet committed serious crimes or reached a threshold of mental instability qualifying them for court-ordered mental health treatment. A dilemma right there, right? Then it says red flag laws can help identify and disarm those who are extreme risks of danger to themselves for others before they reach full-blown mental health crisis or attempt to do this. I'm going to talk about the difficulties of why it is. I just want to go over what they're saying. Red flag laws vary, but they are generally allow non-state actors, such as family members or teachers, to petition a court, people who you're divorced, right, or petition a court to hold hearings on whether someone close to them have their sentiment rights temporarily restricted because he or she presents a serious risk of danger in the future. The Constitution doesn't actually allow that, which is interesting. Anyway, so certainly, we should be wary of attempts to predict future crimes or punish people for acts they might commit in the future. That's my logic. When properly, however, red flag laws can play an important role in protecting from individuals who show clear and repeated indications they are a danger to we've already discussed you can't do that with red flag laws because they're unconstitutional. Then it says to be unobjectionable, these laws must afford meaningful due process protection to those accused of being dangerous and be temporary in nature, which turns on Second Amendment rights limited only to the time where the person continues to be dangerous. I think they got their heart in the right place. Red flag laws, by their nature, are unconstitutional. However, as we were talking about earlier, you know, if somebody has, if they have the three components, if the jeopardy's there, but you can't just arrest people who just talk and just say stupid things. Like, I would throw out all the red flag laws just on their face because they are more danger to people exercising their rights than they are to preventing any particular crime.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
Did you ever use a red flag law? Did you ever enforce them? Did you ever enforce red flag laws, John?
No, they didn't have those when I was around.
Okay.
So it wasn't a matter of...
Wait a minute. John, there's at least red flag laws. What did you do? What did you do? this is your last question. What did you do?
Well, they had involuntary committal laws. So if you went out to a call where someone was mentally unbalanced, and they were presented a danger to themselves or someone else, and you could articulate that, you could take them in for a 72-hour hold against their will. So we would routinely use that, absolutely. If they were a danger to themselves or someone else, we would take them in for an evaluation, and then they would go get professional help. That professional will make a decision on whether or not they were competent or incompetent and decide to hold them or not. But that's how you handle that.
Yeah, but that makes sense because now you're just not singling out guns. Not taking one particular right that is a particular target, a particular orientation. That's a different thing.
Right.
So if you would
do
that, that's okay. Because you're taking away everything. You're taking away the guns, the cars, the alcohol, the screwdrivers, you know, everything. So that nothing is injured to them. I understand that. That makes sense. And then, of course, it goes through due process. But what I'm objecting to with these red flag laws is that your ex can call up the judge and say, oh, they're a danger. Take their guns away just out of being vindictive. Or say to their future victim, you know, this person was talking to me, using their guns in a horrible way. You better steal them. And now they're a victim. So the laws, you know, cause far more damage. Besides being unconstitutional, I can really give an advantage to people that know how to work the system. Did you ever see that in cases like that?
And it can be deadly. That's already happened. So I don't remember where it happened, but that one guy that the family member made a call to the police, said he was a danger to himself, danger to others. He was going to kill somebody. They went to the house, showed up, gunfight ensues. They kill him. And it turns out the family member was just pissed off because they had a disagreement earlier over something stupid. And they made the call.
That was stupid. Yeah. So that's a lack of due process. That's a lack of investigating. But the law itself is wrong. You know, like I said,
I agree. But that was how they used that as a tool. They use it as a tool, just like you said, to be vindictive or to get back at somebody. Not to mention, you can use that to disarm your victim. So let's take domestic violence.
Yeah, that's why I made that case too. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I'm the abuser. I call on my wife and say she's crazy. She's going to kill everybody in the house, take all our stuff away, and then I can do what I want.
Yep. That we thought of that too. That's as usual. So the two cases are the vindictive ex, you know, either in a divorce or a relationship, or the stalker, the perpetrator of the crime. They don't take that into account. They just want to get rid of the guns because this idea, and it's a crazy idea. So we'll kind of end on this: the idea that you can absolutely prevent crime. I think people think that they're looking for an absolute prevention. We can absolutely prevent, you know, mass public shootings if we do this. And you can't. And the greater danger is that you're going to take everybody's rights away in the process, which you can't do either. You can't stop crime by taking away rights. It just doesn't work. And it's unconstitutional. It violates all our rights.
Yeah, so ask the Secret Service. Ask the Secret Service. They know that if someone's willing to trade their life for the president's, the president's going to die. You can't prevent it. Right? That's the premier agency. That's the premier preventative agency. But to your point is you're never going to prevent the crime.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't violate someone's rights just because a crime might be committed.
Yeah. Because that's the greater danger to all of us. You know, and we're not diminishing what happens when people are killed. You know, and this is, but, you know, intrinsically, we don't feel that because as human beings, we want to stop the crime. So it's a hard argument to make. To say, and it probably sounds very cold to some people. Well, but you know, because they're looking at it emotionally. Well, we got to stop the crime. We got to seize the guns. We got to stop them from doing things. Well, you don't know that. You're assuming, and you can't. You're making assumptions. There's no basis in that you can make.
A lot
and
of
again,
it's posturing. It's posturing and designed to make themselves feel better, like they're doing something. Schools are a perfect example of that. You want to prevent school shooting? Put an armed person there.
Yeah.
Simple as that. It really is that simple. But that offends people because that's a solution to a problem that's political where they can't make money or profit from it.
Have there been many shootings in private schools?
Not that I know of.
Why
Not
is that?
That I, know of. I think statistically 90 – well, a lot of those are locked down. I take that back because they just have one in South Carolina that's a private college.
Mm-hmm.
So they do happen. But statistically, 96% of all mass shootings occurred in gun-free zones.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Or is it called, as we call victim zones. Yeah.
Sure. But that's the case to be made. So if you really want to solve the problem, especially with schools, it's simple.
Yeah.
You hire people that are professionals to sit in front of that school and do it. Jewish schools are a perfect example of that. So in L.A. especially, most of those schools are guarded by at least one armed security, if not two. And there's a procedure to get in and get out of that school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of one Jewish school that's been a victim of a mass shooting that I can think of.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's a hard target.
That makes sense. I think
we've got all these other schools. That,
Well, I was going to say, so the real problem is the government schools. And most of the people that are doing this are ex-students. So whatever they learned in that government school. And yet that's never taken into account.
No, I agree too. But then we're back to controlling the narrative and controlling the information flow.
Right.
Not to mention, let's put medication on that. This is a broader topic that we can go on for hours for, but let's take medicating kids from kindergarten up, right, because of their behavior that's normal.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned in the very first part of the show where it's talking about, you know, the drugs from vaccinations to ADHD drugs to puberty blockers to antidepressants, all these psychotropic things, everything that people are given, plus the combination of all of them. No one knows what all these drugs do together.
Sure.
Horrible effects. And most of the shooters have been on some kind of psychotropic. This is where I'm from next is the trans drugs, the puberty blocking drugs. How do they affect with ADHD plus vaccines plus the psychotropics, the antidepressants? Yeah. You know, I don't think we ever actually – yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I think that's right. What do they think is going to happen when you put children on medication during their formative years and you didn't think there was going to be a problem with that later on?
You create monsters.
You're telling them they're damaged. You're telling them they have to be on medication.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're feeding them what you're feeding them in school, and you wonder why we have these problems.
Yeah, and then you take all the boys who are, you know, it's males that are committing most of these crimes, if not all, virtually all of them, and you tell them they're toxically masculine, that they have no place in society, they're the enemy. What do you think they're going to do? You know,
they're going to get that aggression out somewhere.
Yeah.
It's going to
play
come
sports.
Whether you like
you know,
it.
And it. Yeah, and it used to be sports, Boy Scout camp, all the things that young men did. My physical activity, because I was not an athlete, was marching band. And if you don't think carrying a tuba is an athletic activity, then you've never carried one. And play march at the same time, especially the big metal ones.
Yeah.
It was a sport. Trust me, I got my knees were a little stressed out at the end of some marching seasons. I had to go through some therapy and exercise. So, yeah, it's definitely a sport. I got sports injured in marching band. Anyway, I don't think we ever really dealt with the question, but we have peripherally. And of course, the title of the show, Our Greatest National Threat is the Lack of Americans Carrying Guns. If we've got a couple more minutes, we'll go a little bit of overtime. That the real solution is not the red flag laws. It's not the universal background checks. It's not going overboard using mental health. It's not gun control. It's not any of these things. What it really the problems that we have is an invasion of 8 million people plus completely lax crime enforcement. Because of that, and we can't change those as individuals. So the only thing we as an individual can do to fight the invading, the barbarians inside the gate, plus the incredible lack of enforcement against criminals, is to carry guns. That is the single most, I think, important thing that an individual can do to not only help themselves, but help the whole country. That if we had a national carry program, you know, if restaurants offered a 10% discount for concealed carry and 20% for open carry, why don't we have that? I mean, so many things we could do that we're not doing. We need to be pro-gun as opposed to anti and being only defensive against the antis. We need to be pro.
No, I agree. Well, what do they say? An armed society is a polite society, right?
Well, it is.
Yeah.
But it's also a safe society. It's a safe society more than polite. Polite is yeah, that's nice, but an armed society is a safe society.
Sure. And that kind of goes to the bill you were talking about initially. You know, and I think if you tweak that a little bit, you can make that work. But and I think if you approached it from a national security perspective as well, like in order to ensure our national security, then you promote that education, right? Because it is a national security issue, right?
Yeah.
As far as your own safety and everybody else's. Right.
You know? I expand on this next week. Because we're just starting to talk about that, but it's actually in the title, Our Greatest National Threat. And I couldn't fit security in it because these titles, they're very short. I can't put as much as I want
in
there. But I consider the lack of Americans carrying guns to be a national security threat. And to combat that, we need more people carrying guns. And that includes tax credits, tax deductions, education, retail and restaurants offering discounts. And there's so many things that can be done, that should be done. Mm-hmm. And politically, we need to make it not only acceptable, but desirable for Americans to be carrying guns to prevent these crimes.
Yeah, sure. I think that's sort of education, right? You can get that back in. Sure. Generally, I'm not a fan of subsidizing government programs, but I think if you approach it from a national security perspective and maintaining a well-regulated militia, you can get away with it.
Well, I'm not subsidizing. That's why I didn't put subsidies in. We're not paying people to carry guns. We're just making it easier financially by not taxing their right, as you mentioned earlier. Tax credits for the gun purchase. Well, that doesn't affect them. They're, you know, that just comes off the money that they would have paid in taxes anyway. So it's not like they're gaining any money, but they are gaining a firearm. And the government, hey, you know, they got to spend less money anyway. So tax credit, they give child tax credits to illegal aliens. The least they can do is give gun credits to Americans.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought there was a part in there where you were going to subsidize lower income.
No, that's my gun stance bill. No. Well, you read the bill. In fact, take a look at the bills. And, of course, you're free to make comments on them. That's how we legislate. You know, the whole purpose of posting these bills is so people look at them, comment. And a lot of times I make amendments based on the comments. These bills are always fluid. So they're not set in stone just because they're on there. The whole point of this is to make comments. And then when they're ready to go, we put them in. We take them from citizen bill ideas and then put them in all proposed laws. But all these are fluid. That's the whole point of them. But yeah, there's I wrote a bill as a joke, but actually the more I think about it, it's kind of a good idea. Gun stamps. Is it just like food stamps? Only they forgot. So people can oh, come on, it's a great bill, right? So I'll bring this up on January 7th. But yeah, so the idea is that the Department of Agriculture, if you get food stamps, you can get gun stamps. So that you literally subsidize guns so that low-income people can exercise their Second Amendment rights. Why not? Food's not a right.
Yes, it's. No, I agree, but I don't think the government should be subsidizing food.
Right. No, I don't either.
But that's right. So that's, I mean, that's how I, we're back to, you know, if you're going to name your bills and argue on the merits, I think that we can't fall into the same trap they do if that's the case of using people's money to subsidize other people to exercise what they're doing. Tax credits, I'm a big fan of, because they shouldn't be taking our money in the first place. So if we get as much back as possible.
Right. Yeah, that's why that's a joke, Bill. Just fun to think about, though. Gun stand.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that's where the naming, you should reconsider that a little bit. Because we kind of touched that earlier. Is only because we're in a society now where you have to fight fire with fire. And the way you're going to maintain and get that public support is by at least putting it out there in such a way they can stomach it and they can, it's palatable. Right, to them.
No,
it doesn't
sense.
Automatically start with offending their senses. You know, if you throw, hey, look, this is a Second Amendment bill, you're already alienating 50% of the population.
Well, you're
going to
put titles in the comments. You know, work on the title, see what you come up with,
right.
Put it in a comment, and I'll take a look and we'll talk about it. It's probably a good idea.
No, for sure.
I can be really self-righteous and stand on my principles, but if it doesn't get us anywhere, then, you know, it's worth considering.
It's guerrilla warfare.
It really
and
is.
That's the way I see it. So,
yeah,
look, so our revolution is a perfect example of that. Had the generals for the Americans stood on their principles and stood on the tradition, we would have lost that war.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, I've watched The Patriot with Mel Gibson, and he says, what kind of an idiot would stand toe-to-toe, literally toe-to-toe, in other words, the toes facing, you know, standing up in a line against a bunch of British regulars with Brown Bess muskets, which are notoriously inaccurate anyway. The whole point is to not be there. Why would you stand in the way of a bullet or a musket ball? That's just stupid.
Sure. And the British lost because that's what they did.
Yeah. Well, they had to. They were a gentleman's war. The war was designed by aristocrats and fought by peasants. Well, that's what happens.
Sure. But that's what we're in now.
Yeah. Well, we can defeat the aristocrats. We got a good new speaker. I mean, let's see what Mike Johnson does. You know, this is going to be fun to watch. I mean, I'm as excited now as I was when Trump was elected. So we'll see. Anyway, I got to let you go. Let's get a shameless plug in, and then I've got a weekend. And you got a weekend too. Let's go have some fun. So yeah.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. Yeah, womensfarmacademy.com. You can reach out there. We're on social media, Substack, and some other platforms as well. And you can get all that from the website.
Sounds good. Got a couple more announcements to play, and then our ending music on Fridays is the 1812 Overture. Very appropriate. And I'll be back Monday. Thanks, John. So,
cool,
yeah, it's been a great
week.
It's been a great week. We've got more things coming. We've got more excitement. We've got more guests coming. There's so many things in the works. And, of course, the big one is January 7th. So our Citizen Legislation Day, it's all over my Facebook page. It's all over our different groups. It's all over every place. So you can take a look at that. So we will meet again 7 a.m. Central Time Monday. And let's get it started. We'll do it all again.
Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is GraithCare.com. That's GRAITHCare.com. You can email them at GraithCare.ADM@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. GraithCare, better health through better knowledge and advocacy.
Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car?
If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street, in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too.